This is a free non-commercial podcast made possible by our patrons. Our patrons help keep these podcasts without jarring modern commercials. Thank you for supporting our program. If you want to become a patron to support our programs, you can. For as little as $1 a month, you can become a patron and receive special perks as a supporter of OTR Now. To become a patron, visit our webcast page at otrnow.com and click on the Patreon link. And thank you to all the patrons who have helped keep Old Time Radio alive.
Reminiscing, I feel you near. Once more, you're my love of yesteryear.
It's time for the OTR Now radio program, featuring programs from the golden age of radio.
And here's your host, Rick Radke.
Welcome to 3 hours of the greatest stories ever told. On the OTR Now radio program, we play old-time radio just for you. Well, we play it for ourselves, too. We like to listen to it. We like to bring it to you. We hope you enjoy it, and we hope you enjoy the first program. It's an hour-long program. It's called Good News of 1939. It was broadcast over NBC. This particular show has a KFI Los Angeles air check. It's sponsored by Maxwell House Coffee, and locally by Bulova, and by Beckman's Fur. The first tune is The Bumpy Road to Love, and Frank Morgan relates how he battled burglars in his house. Louis Mayer and Father Flanagan talk about Boys Town, the movie, and appeal for funds. Daddy prepares baby Snooks for a visit from their boss. There's scenes from The Shining Hour with Joan Crawford, Melvin Douglas, and Robert Young. Meredith Wilson and his orchestra appear on the program, and we know Fanny Bryce is the voice of baby Snooks. So let's listen to this star-studded program, Good News of 1939. This is from November 17th, 1938.
Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. The makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another star-studded hour of entertainment from the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood. Tonight's stars, Joan Crawford, Margaret Sullivan, Melvin Douglas, Robert Young, Tony Martin, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, and Meredith Wilson, who starts our program off with the new hit, The Bumpy Road to Love.
Oh,
Here's your host for the evening, Robert Young.
Thank you, Ted. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is now my pleasure to introduce a very good friend of mine, a star from our neighbor studio, 20th Century Fox, Tony Martin.
Hello, Bob. Nice to see you again.
It's our pleasure to have you with us, Tony.
Say, Bob, do you mind if I make a phone call?
Not at all.
Rather important, my brokers.
Go right ahead. Go right
ahead. Thank you. Trinity, 4512, please.
Everybody's laughing.
Hello? Is this High Boy, High Boy, High Boy, and High Boy? Let me talk to Mr. Lohman, please.
A ringer.
Hello, Chuck. This is Chick. My old college nickname, Bob.
Sure, they used to call me Drip.
Say, Chuck, how's my stock? Up an eighth? Oh, down an eighth? Is that good?
Sheep of Wall Street.
Heck, Chuck. I'll be stuck for Jack if you don't hawk that stock.
How about a check for Chick, Chuck?
Quiet! Okay, Chuck, I'll call you Buck. Kaboo.
Kaboo? Oh, well, I...
I beg your pardon. Are you Mr. Martin?
And what kind of talk is that?
Well, you see, I'm the leader.
Oh, yes. Glad to meet her.
Hey, what's going on here?
Bob, do you mind if I make a call?
Oh, no, Meredith, not at all. He's got me.
Hello, Trinity 4512, please.
That's my broker.
Oh, the same fella takes from both of you.
Hello, Ted. This is Med. How's the market? Pretty dead? Okay, Ted, I'll call you in the morning. Hangs up.
Oh, you read the sound effects in this program.
Only Wilson. What's all this talk about stock market anyway?
Well, I own a Liberty bond on margin.
Small fry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now me, you see, you know, I'm on a cigarette program, so naturally I like to support the chest.
No. Can't do it.
Oh, not one little plug?
Not positively not.
Not positively not.
It's everything.
All right. I was just going to say that I own some small oil shares, Shasta Oil Company. I'll probably be a millionaire in a couple of weeks.
Oh, sure.
Oh, sure.
You see, Bob... twins. One of the wells brings in 8,000 barrels a day.
I never heard of it.
Never heard of the Shasta fields? Why, Bob...
He got it in, the dog.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Martin sings one of the most popular songs of the day, My Reverie.
Bells were ringing, birds were singing, yet my heart was lonely, till I found you were so near me in my in my reverie. I can see that this love was meant for me. Only a poor fool, never schooled in a whirlpool of romance, could be so cruel as you are to me. My dreams are as worthless as tin to me. Without you, life would never begin to be. So, love me as I love you in my reverie. Make my dream a reality. Let's dispense with formality. Come to me in my reverie.
My dreams are as worthless as sin to me.
Are worthless without you.
Life would ever be haunting and haunting me, the clock ticking endlessly over. Over and over and over and over.
love me as I love you in my reverie. Make my dream a reality. Let's dispense with formality.
Mrs. Morgan. No, Frank's not here yet. Burglar? What burglar? Say, that's terrible. What happened to Frank? He spent the night in the icebox. Oh, yes? Well, I'll tell him to... Oh, wait a minute. Here he is now. Phone call for you, Frank.
Oh, I can't take it, Bob. I'm in a state of nervous prostration. Besides, I have a cold. I couldn't talk to the President of the United States now. Just hang up.
It's your wife.
Oh, that's different. Hello? Yes, I took the quinine. Yes, I took the bromo. Yes, I took the bus. Well, I'll be all right. Yes, dear. Yes, dear. Goodbye, dear.
Got a cold, huh?
Yes. Did my wife say anything to you about last night?
No.
What an adventure. Bob, have you ever been called upon to defend your home, your loved ones, against the horde of desperados from the underworld?
You did that, Frank?
Bob, at 2:35 o'clock this morning, burglars broke into my house.
Really? How much did they lose?
This is no time for jokes, my boy. Better ones than that, I hope, too.
My mistake.
It's long been part of my health regime to take a cold shower at 2:30 every morning, if there's any hot water.
Yeah?
Following this custom, I had just emerged from the shower and was toweling myself briskly when I felt a strange tingling sensation at the base of my spine.
You sensed the burglars?
No, I backed into a radiator. Naturally, this sharpened my alertness, and a few seconds later, I heard the bathroom door open stealthily. I looked up, and there stood a monstrous plug ugly, armed to the teeth, with a mask on his face.
And you were stark naked?
He covered me with a revolver.
Were you scared, Frank?
My boy, the word fear is not in the Morgan lexicon. Mm. You know our motto, cherche la femme, and don't shoot till you see the whites of their eggs.
Eggs.
With the courage of a lion, I sprang at the gorilla like a tiger, and I soon had him buffaloed.
What a circus.
Clown. I seized the fellow by the throat, wrested his gun away, and floored him with a single punch.
A hero.
You bet. I thought I had disposed of the criminals, but fearing for my wife's safety, I rushed to her room, only to discover four villainous bums surrounding her.
More burglars?
No, my wife's friends. Fine time for a card game. Then I heard a crash below in the billiard room.
That was your cue. Where did you hide?
Behind the eight ball. No, I tore down the stairs, tore into the billiard room, and tore up my script.
That was last week's script.
Yes, if I'd seen this one, I'd have torn it up, too.
Well, what about the desperados? All gone?
Far from it. The room was full of armed men.
How many?
Well, it was no time to take a census. There must have been at least 16, but quickly recalling the jiu-jitsu I'd learned during my years in the Orient, I crouched and waited for them to make the first move. Suddenly, the leader yawned.
Yawned?
Yes. As his mouth opened, I heard the golden knock of opportunity.
Come in.
Pardon me. I thought this was the waiting room.
One of the Crosby mob. Where was I?
You had the leader yawning. Me too.
Vagrant. When the gangster yawned, I rammed a few pool cue in his... I rammed a pool cue in his mouth, and the fight was on. I banked the leader into the side pocket, played a combination off of two small thugs, and ran eight before I quit. Oh, no. Now, why should an escaped maniac write my material?
Did you mop up the burglars?
It was a massacre. You know the old saying, his strength was the strength of 10, because his heart was pure.
I guess that explodes that.
Yes. Well,
I laid them all out cold, the whole 25 of them, and rushed into the street to blow my police whistle. Inside of five
Frank,
minutes...
Frank, you're still naked.
You're crazy. This is a sports outfit. I've got... The police arrived in 10 minutes, decorated me for bravery, and took the crooks away, including my wife's friends. What a night.
It certainly was. How did you catch the cold, Frank?
My dear fellow, evidently you don't retain well.
No.
From the time I sighted the first burglar to 2:35 a.m., I was engaged in hand-to-hand conflict with desperate villains for 2 hours. And right up to the time when I trussed up the 37th villain and bundled him into the patrol wagon, I was clad only in my birthday suit.
Happy birthday.
Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
Thank you. Well, Bob, I'd better be going. I've got to see. I was just
wait
going...
Wait a minute, you
what?
Nudist.
What? What's the matter?
What about the icebox?
Oh, it's a wonderful invention. When you... Oh, you... Did my wife say anything?
No. She didn't say anything. She just told me you spent the night in the icebox.
I spent the night... I was at the icebox. Oh... What a wife. I've got to go right home and tell her a few
come
things.
Come here. What about the icebox?
You mean the icebox?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, it was a very unfortunate thing. As soon as I discovered the burglar in the house, I dashed to the icebox to get my revolver.
Man keeps his rod with a fish, sure.
Well, I yanked open the heavy door, reached for my arsenal, and just then I slipped on a banana peel. I fell forward and the door swung shut behind me. I was trapped. Imagine my distress. A house full of desperados, and there I was, locked in the icebox with 300 bottles of beer.
Well, that was... It was terrible. No way out.
Worse than that, no bottle openers. I almost died of thirst till I was released in the morning.
That's fine. That's a very sensible story, Frank, but there's just one thing. What was your gun doing in the icebox?
I've been waiting for you to ask me that, sneak.
All right, I'll ask you again. What was your gun doing in the icebox?
Well, it's an air gun, and I always keep it in the frigid air, and you can send that to Ripley. So long. I've got to...
Oh, Tony.
Yeah, Bob?
Tony, it's great to have you here, and to let our Maxwell House friends hear you sing.
wish you will always continue
to be mine.
For love, sweet tender, when your tender tears depart, lover, I surrender to my
Ladies and gentlemen, I now introduce one of Los Angeles' most prominent citizens and churchmen, Joseph Scott.
It is a genuine privilege to be permitted to present to you Louis V. Mayer, not as a great executive and leader in the motion picture industry, which he certainly is, but as an outstanding citizen of most benevolent spirit. A gentleman whose heart pulses with true understanding, a very real American, Mr. Mayer.
Thank you, Joe. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, I want to tell you the story of a motion picture, the story of Boys Town. Back in 1936, one of our producers, John W. Considine, Jr., told us of a newspaper article he had read about Father Flanagan. It has always been our policy to seek out story material based upon the lives of great men, stories of achievement, of industry, and patriotism. And in this story of this kindly priest and his home for friendless boys was seen the possibility for a great inspirational picture. Later, this producer and a writer were dispatched to Omaha so that they might see at firsthand Boys Town. Father Flanagan was enthused with the idea of making a motion picture of Boys Town. He saw in this motion picture an opportunity for recognition he had dreamed of but never hoped to realize, to bring the story of Boys Town to the peoples of all the world. In securing Father Flanagan's agreement to make this picture, utilizing his own life story, his work and the facilities of the institution he had built up, there was no thought of profit. Father Flanagan's sole interest was in bringing his message before the greatest number of people. After the picture was made, as fine as it was not even remotely imagined that while it would attract tremendous interest in Father Flanagan's Boys Town, it might serve to diminish rather than increase the public donations through which this good work is carried on. In the writing and in the filming of Boys Town, something happened that was unforeseen. If you will remember the picture, it presented Father Flanagan as rather a financial wizard. He got himself out of a half a dozen tight financial scrapes, and at the end, all troubles seemed to be over. Boys Town was solvent, seemed rich. Father Flanagan's home at Boys Town had been made possible only through the contributions of the American people. Boys Town can only exist through the interest and the support of the public. This was true of yesterday and of today, and will be true tomorrow and the years to come. Tonight we are grateful for the privilege of presenting Father Flanagan again to all of our friends in the Maxwell House radio audience, so that he may tell in his own words the needs of Boys Town today. Father Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And all that you have said is so very, very true. The motion picture of Boys Town has met with every expectation that we had for it. It has brought our work to the consciousness of the people of America and of all the world. We do have a great problem at Boys Town, and I know that you will be concerned with it as I am concerned. In 1937, it was necessary for us to deny admittance to Boys Town to 763 worthy boys. Again this year, we will probably have to turn away twice that number, because when Boys Town was shown on the screen, it increased our applications, but as it increased the attention of the boys, the picture decreased our contributions, for the very reason that Mr. Mayor explained to you. Boys Town belongs to all people everywhere. They have built it, they have carried it on from year to year. And it will only be through the contributions of our friends that we will be able to continue. We are able to maintain a boy, to educate him, to clothe him, and to feed him for an entire year for $180. Our doors are open to any race, any creed, and any color at any time. I am glad to again be in Los Angeles and to visit with you, Mr. Mayor, and wish to thank you again for this opportunity to tell the American people of Boys Town's needs.
And Father Flanagan, we consider it a real privilege to be able to participate in this fine cause. But your troubles, I am afraid, will not be entirely over with the increased donations we hope Boys Town will receive. Because I am asking our President Nicholas M. Skenk to recommend to the Board of Directors of our corporation to commemorate our pride and appreciation of our association, my dear Father Flanagan, that we be permitted to erect at Boys Town a suitable building that we will mutually agree upon so that you will have more boys to take care of, and we know the public support you have always enjoyed will be even greater in the future to meet your growing needs. People gifted with a taste for fine things truly appreciate the efforts of those who create them. When you see a good play, read a good book, enjoy a fine movie like The Great Waltz, you pay tribute to those who created it. We pay tribute also to genius in other fields. Such a genius is Joel Cheek, who pioneered in the art of coffee blending. It was his skill that developed the famous Maxwell House blend, which has given so much pleasure to so many millions. Well, as a mark of respect, we dedicate tonight's program to him. So won't you all join us now in our Maxwell House moment of relaxation with a steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House coffee and the music of Meredith Wilson. We now pause briefly for station identification.
Here she is, ladies and gentlemen, Fanny Bryce, Baby Snooks. Tonight, Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, is a little nervous. His boss is coming to dinner for the first time, and Daddy doesn't want anything to go wrong. Take it away.
Table looks fine. Now, where are the cigars? Oh, here. I guess he'll fall for this layout, all right.
Hello, Daddy.
Oh, hello, Snooks. Oh, let's have a look at you.
Why did I have to put on my new dress, Daddy?
Because my boss is coming for dinner.
Why?
Well, we don't have guests very often, and it's good to make social contacts and fraternize with intellectual people. My boss is a very smart man. I like to listen to his conversation. You understand?
You're trying to get a raise.
Nothing of the kind. And I don't want you making any cracks when he gets here either.
I won't, Daddy.
Above all, don't say anything about his hair.
Why?
Just don't, that's all.
What's the matter with his hair?
Nothing. I'm just warning you not to make any remarks about it.
All right.
And listen, Snooks. You're not to come into the dining room while we're having dinner. Not even if my boss asks you to.
Why?
Never mind why. All I want you to do is greet Mr. Gordon and then run upstairs and play.
All right.
And now we'd better have a little rehearsal. I'll be Mr. Gordon.
Who is he?
My boss. I'll be my boss.
Huh?
I said I'm Mr. Gordon.
No, you ain't. You're my daddy.
We're just pretending. I want to make sure you'll behave nicely when Mr. Gordon comes. Now, I'm Mr. Gordon, and I'm coming in.
Oh, good evening, Snooks.
Hello, Daddy.
No. Say good evening to Mr. Gordon.
Where is he?
He's not here yet.
Now, why should I say good evening to him?
You're not saying it to him, you're saying it to me. Right now, I'm Mr. Gordon, even though I'm still your daddy. And while Mr. Gordon isn't even here yet, you can say good evening to him because you're really saying it to me. And don't ask me if I feel all right.
Why?
Now, don't you start to irritate me, Snooks. And another thing. In case Mr. Gordon asks you to come in to dinner, I want you to say no thanks. I've already eaten. Now, let's try it.
All right.
Now, here we go.
Where are we going?
Nowhere!
Ah.
Now, let's try it. Oh, good evening, Snooks.
No, thanks. I've already eaten.
Say good evening first.
Why?
Because you've got to greet him. Now, let's try it again. Good evening, Snooks.
Good evening, Mr. Gordon.
What? Oh, Snooks, will you come in and eat with us?
Uh-huh.
No, I told you to say you'd already eaten.
I'm still hungry.
Just the same, you've got to say I've already eaten.
Uh-huh.
Say I've already eaten. Good evening, Snooks. Will you eat with us?
Daddy's already eaten.
What?
But I'm hungry.
No, no, no. Now, please, please, Snooks. I don't want to lose my temper with you. When he asked you to come in and eat, just say... Oh, there he is now. Now, remember, Snooks.
All right.
Oh, hello, ladies.
Oh, well, come right in, Mr. Gordon.
Nice place you are. There he is. Oh, is this baby Snooks?
Yes, sir, Mr. Gordon. Shake hands with Mr. Gordon, Snooks.
How?
What a cute child.
Dinner's all ready. Shall we go in?
Okay. Snooks, will you have a bite with us?
Huh?
Snooks.
I say, will you have a bite with us?
No, thanks. I've already bitten.
Run along upstairs and play, Snooks. This way, Mr. Gordon.
Daddy?
Yes?
Why did you tell me not to say anything about his hair?
What's that?
He ain't got any.
Well, do you think that's funny, young lady?
Uh-huh. He'll look like my Uncle Roy.
Oh. Pay no attention to her, Mr. Gordon. She's a great little clown. What are you yelling about?
I don't know.
Let her come in and sit with us while we eat, Higgins.
Oh, no, she has to she has to do her homework. Don't you, Snooksy?
No, I don't.
Oh, all right, come on. You sit here, Mr. Gordon, and Snooks, you sit by me.
No, I don't want to.
Well, why not?
I want to sit near Mr. Gordon and watch him do some tricks.
Tricks? What tricks?
I wish I was dead.
Will you have some water, Mr. Gordon?
No, thank you.
Well, what's the matter?
Make him swallow the water, Daddy.
Well, why do you want to see me swallow water?
Because Daddy says you drink like a fish.
Oh, she made that up. She made it up, so help me, Mr. Gordon. I never said anything of the kind. You go upstairs this minute, you little scamp.
If he takes me out, I'll spill the soup on Mr. Gordon.
Well, I must say, Higgins, this little daughter of yours makes eating here a pleasure.
You like it, Mr. Gordon?
No, he doesn't like it. Mr. Gordon wants you to leave the room so he can eat in peace. What are you doing?
My penny fell onto the table.
Be careful, Snooks. You're pulling the table.
Hey, look out!
Snooks, the whole thing's going to fall.
I think I'll go now.
Oh, there's the whole dinner.
I wasn't very hungry anyhow. I think I'll go too.
Oh, now, just a minute, Mr. Gordon. Please don't leave. We might be able to straighten this out.
Give him some pie, Daddy.
Hmm? Oh, yeah, yes. How about a piece of green apple pie, hmm?
Mm-hmm.
Here, look at it. Oh, you'll love it.
Well, all right. Have you a little piece of cheese to go with it?
A cheese? Oh, I'm awfully sorry, Mr. Gordon. There isn't a piece of cheese in the house.
Yes, there is, Daddy. I'll go get it.
Oh, fine. Phew. I'm terribly sorry about this.
That's all right. The child didn't mean it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Here's the cheese, Mr. Gordon.
Oh, thanks, Nuts. Mmm. That's good, too.
Eat it all.
Oh, yes. Well, I will.
You know, that's funny. I distinctly remember Mother saying we were out of cheese.
This is great. I guess you've got sharper eyes than your daddy, eh, Snooks?
Uh-huh. Where did you find that cheese, Snooks?
In the mousetrap.
Oh, you little...
Yeah.
our singing ensemble present the novelty number, Shadrach.
Wait!
Children from the land of Israel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and they took a trip into the land of Babylon. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, he took a lot of gold and he made an idol. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. And he told everybody, when you hear the music of the cornet, and he told everybody, when you hear the music of the flute, and he told everybody, when you hear the music of the harp, you must fall down and worship the idol Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
But the children of Israel would not bow down Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
Would be fooled with a golden idol Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
I said you couldn't even fool him with a golden idol Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
So the king put the children in a fiery furnace, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. He donned the coals on a red-hot brimstone, Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
Seven times harder, harder than it ought to be, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Burned up the soldiers the king had put there, Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
But the Lord sent an angel with snowy white wings down in the middle of the furnace, talking to the children about the power of the gospel, Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
Well, I couldn't even burn a hair on the head of old Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, laughing in the corner while the fire was jumping round.
Meshach, Abednego.
Now old Nebuchadnezzar called, hey there, when he saw the power of the Lord, and they had a big time in the house of Babylon, Shadrach,
Meshach, Abednego.
Oh, Abednego.
Shadrach.
Abednego.
Meshach.
Abednego.
Shadrach.
Maxwell House Coffee presents the MGM Theater of the Air, where tonight, producer Joseph L. Mankiewicz presents several scenes from his latest picture, The Shining Hour, based on the famous stage success by Keith Winters. The Shining Hour, the story of a fascinating, spectacularly attractive woman and of her marriage into an old and honorable family. The woman, Olivia Riley, played by Joan Crawford, was born Maggie Riley and has fought her way up from New York's East Side to stardom as a dancer in fashionable nightclubs. The man is Henry Linden, played by Melvin Douglas, the head of a family that's been distinguished in America for generations, a family that doesn't relish the prospect of this new marriage. In fact, David Linden, Henry's brother, has flown to New York to protest this marriage. David, played by Robert Young, arrives unannounced at a huge party Olivia is giving to announce her engagement and finds Henry with Olivia at the bar.
Hello, Henry.
David, hello. What are you doing here? Why didn't you let me know you were coming? Olivia, this is David.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Where are you staying, David? How long are you going to be here?
I don't know how long. I came east to talk to you.
Oh. Well, suppose I go sober up a few of my guests. It was nice meeting you.
Thank you.
Perhaps I'll see you later.
Well, now, David, what in the name of Linden brings you here?
The name of Linden, Henry.
Oh, very very melodramatically put. All right, let's get it over with. I guess the library will be empty. It's the farthest from the bar. Here we are. As soon as I can find the light.
Oh!
What the?
Oh, a couple of bookworms.
Well, you might give a person a little warning. Come on, Joe. Let's find a quiet room.
Friends of yours?
We're friends of each other, I hope. Well, what's on your mind? I suppose Hannah asked you to come.
She's worried about you.
I've never been in better health in my life.
She feels if you came home for a while, perhaps your sense of values...
Mm-hmm. ...would become her sense of values. Is that it? Your point, or Hannah's, it doesn't make any difference, is that Olivia's not good enough for the Lindens. My point is, there isn't a Linden good enough for her.
And as points go, it's a pretty shabby one, Henry.
You're no judge of that, David.
Perhaps not, but you should be. You've got eyes and ears. Look around you to friends. Listen to what they say. The cream of cafe society. I'll take the village halfwit back home.
That's enough, David.
Why, you're behaving like a naive little schoolboy. We're not being prudes about this, but... Well, after all, why marry?
That's enough, David.
Henry.
Olivia.
There's a reporter out there, darling. You go tell him how deliriously happy you are.
Aren't you coming too?
I've already told him.
Well, I'll be back in a moment.
I gather you're not drunk with joy over this marriage.
I think you're making a mistake.
You mean you think Henry's making a mistake?
Both of you. You see, I don't think you'd like us much.
You mean you wouldn't like me?
Why don't you let me decide what I mean by what I say?
So I'm to give up Henry because his brother's insufferable and smug.
All right, you want it? Here it is. When Henry and I walked in here just now, we interrupted a very romantic couple.
Well, you should have coughed.
I was too busy thinking of what would happen if he ever walked in and found you in the same situation.
Tell that to the boys behind the barn.
That, Miss Riley, is exactly what I mean.
So Henry and Olivia are married and fly to Wisconsin, to the home of the Lindens. Hannah, the elder sister to David and Henry, makes no effort to conceal her dislike of Olivia. But Judy, David's wife, adores her on sight. Olivia and David are irresistibly drawn to each other. In spite of themselves, they are slowly but certainly yielding to their emotions. This afternoon, they've gone for a horseback ride together.
Oh, how beautiful, David. My idea of a swell view was always Central Park from the top of a bus. This sort of thing only existed on backdrops in musical comedies.
Like it?
Like it. Oh, but you're so used to it. You don't know the thrill of suddenly coming upon something so beautiful it takes your breath away.
I think I do.
I wish Judy had been able to ride with us. I like her.
She adores you.
I detest women as a rule. I know too much about them, but... David, do you know how lucky you are?
Yes, I know exactly how lucky I am.
I'm glad.
Why should it make any difference to you?
Because I want you to be happy.
Why?
Well, because I... Well, David, let's not get into one of those pointless discussions.
I've hardly been civil to you. Why should you want me to be happy?
Well, I... Look, David. See the little knoll beside the lake?
Yeah.
David.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what I said to you in New York. For even coming to New York.
It's all right. I forgave you then, forgive you now, and a blanket pardon for all future trespasses.
Oh, you were right to have slapped me. I was so smug and complacent.
It's all right,
sure.
David. Let's forget about it.
Tonight, the Lindens are giving a party to celebrate the new house that Henry and Olivia have built. In the midst of the festivities, Henry comes upon Judy sitting all alone in a secluded spot.
I'm in a gay, dancing mood, Judy. Come on, we'll toss off a gavotte.
Oh, no, thank you, Henry.
Eat?
I'm not hungry.
Don't tell me you're moonstruck.
Yeah. Isn't it awful?
You want to be exciting, Judy?
Yes, more than anything.
Why?
Oh, so that David might look at me and suddenly know that he loved me. So that he might hear a song and think of me. Come into a room I just left and know I'd been there.
Judy, everything's all right, isn't it? Between you and David...
Yes, of course, Henry.
Truly?
Truly, Henry.
Everything is exactly as it always has been.
You had me worried there for a moment.
Henry, what did you feel when you first saw Olivia, the very first instant?
Have I loved her?
Did you care if she loved you?
At first.
Yes, and then?
Then nothing mattered very much, except that I loved her.
Oh. And there was nothing you'd ever want more than just to have her there for you to love.
Mm-hmm. Judy?
Oh, she's so beautiful, Henry, so exciting.
Judy, can you come here a minute?
Yeah, coming. I'll be back in a moment, and we'll toss off that cravat. What is it, Hannah?
Where's David? He promised to mix the punch.
I haven't seen him.
Where's Olivia?
It happens they're not together, if that's what you mean.
Well, I didn't mean anything. Everybody thinks every time I open my mouth lately, I mean something.
Well, don't you? I'll go look for David.
As the days pass, Olivia and David are more strongly drawn to each other, until finally Olivia, fearing the possible consequences, persuades Henry to take her away for a while. Judy, in the meantime, has grown increasingly certain that David and Olivia are in love, that they were made for each other. Tonight, she's gone out somewhere by herself. Henry's out, too. And Olivia, in spite of herself, is finally drawn to the living room where David is playing the piano.
Olivia.
Yes?
Why are you and Henry leaving?
Frankly, because I'm bored here.
Oh.
Well, David, must you play that?
You liked it once.
Well, I'm sick of it now, quite sick of it.
Now you're just being cheap.
I am rather cheap. Have you only just realized it?
Wait. We mustn't quarrel like this.
Oh, yes, we must. And do you know why?
Yes, because...
Because we're so alike. We're both used to getting everything we want. Oh, we're spoiled, David. And spoiled people come to no good end. Ask Hannah.
I'd rather ask you.
You were happy before I came. You'll be happy when I've gone away.
Do you believe that? I wasn't happy. I was content. I'll never be content again.
How can you say that?
Because I love you. And you love me, Olivia.
Oh, there's Judy. Hello, Judy. Well, this heat is pretty terrific, isn't it? Awful. But you look cool.
Do I? I've been up on the ridge. It was lovely there.
What made you sweat all that way on a night like this?
I felt like it. Where's everybody?
Oh, Henry's adding up numbers. I don't know where Hannah is, and I'm going to bed.
No, no, don't go yet. I feel like talking.
All right.
I've got good news for you, Judy. The foal's been born.
Oh, really? Is it a nice one?
Yes, nice little filly, chestnut.
That's good.
I'd better see the vet before he goes.
Well, don't look so cross about it. David, come here.
What's the matter?
There's some fuzz on your coat. I do wish you'd learn to look after yourself, David. There. That's better. Now you can go.
Thank you, Judy.
David is simply monstrous about his clothes. Olivia, I wish you'd been with me on the ridge. I had the strangest sensation. I felt suddenly that I knew everything. That's always satisfying.
Yes, it must be.
Well, maybe I didn't know everything, but I knew for certain that everything I did know was right. Absolutely right.
What did you know, Judy?
Rather more than you tonight.
That's quite possible. I don't think I know anything tonight.
You're making a big mistake, you know.
What do you mean?
You know that expression, two people being made for each other?
Yes.
Well, of course, it's used pretty indiscriminately. But do you believe it's sometimes, very seldom, but sometimes, two people are made for each other and for no one else? Well, do or don't you?
I don't know. I should think it happens very seldom.
Ah, but when it does, it's more important than people being hurt. It's more important than anything, isn't it?
I suppose. But it depends.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't depend on anything.
Olivia, shall I tell you why I admire you?
No, please.
I admire you because you're honest with yourself and clear. I'd be an awful pity if you were ever to become blurred and messy-minded.
I've got to go now, Judy.
No, there's something I want you to do, Olivia. I want you to go away with David. Henry will divorce you.
Henry and I are getting out of here tonight.
And David and I, we'll be happy ever after, I suppose.
Of course you will. In time, you will.
No, that's not true. Olivia, you're going to do what I tell you. You're going to do what I would do.
Judy, you don't know what you're saying.
I do. Unless you take David with you, there is nothing in the future for any of us.
But you love David.
And so do you.
Oh, no, I don't.
And David loves you. You're right, can't you see? It's complete. Tell me you'll make David happy. Tell me you love him for both of us, please.
Judy, I...
Where's Henry and David? The new house is on fire. We've got to find Henry and David.
The new house. My new house. It's gone, Judy. I've lost it before it was ever mine.
John Crawford, Margaret Sullivan, Melvin Douglas, and Robert Young, congratulations on an excellent performance. Ladies and gentlemen, go see The Shining Hour. You'll thoroughly enjoy it.
You're about to hear if men played bridge as women do. But first, Ted Pearson with a swell letter we received from Mr. C.L. Frost, 3928 Monroe Avenue, San Diego, California, who on October the 10th wrote us, quote,
I enjoy your fine program and delicious Maxwell House coffee so much that I'm constrained to write this letter. As a young man, I lived in Nashville, Tennessee, and was well acquainted with Joel Cheek, the originator and blender of Maxwell House coffee. Well, much water's passed under the bridge since then, and here I am, past 80, but still drinking Maxwell House coffee. Only it's the new blend now, which I think is even better than ever before. Unquote. Well, thank you, Mr. Frost. Letters like yours more than repay us for the time and trouble it took to perfect the new Maxwell House. And friends, when you try the new Maxwell House, you're going to find it smoother and richer by far, with a wealth of cheery stimulation in every cup. I think you'll agree, it's marvelous, too. It took 12 expert coffee blenders 8 months before they found the way to enrich Joel Cheek's original secret blend. Then, too, by roasting each bean evenly all the way through, the radiant roast process brings out more of the true flavor. This way, there's no weak coffee due to under-roasting, no bitter coffee due to parching. And remember, the new Maxwell House comes in two grinds. The regular grind is correct for the percolator or boiled method, while the drip grind is correct for all ways of making drip coffee. Two different coffee-making principles, so naturally, two different grinds. Tomorrow, ask your grocer for a pound of the new and improved Maxwell House to try. You'll say that now, more than ever, it's the coffee that's good to the last drop.
Now, by popular request, we repeat the first one in a series of good news satires, If Men Played Cards as Women Do, adapted from the sketch written by George S. Kaufman. Frank Morgan is having a few of the boys in to play cards. He's alone in his living room when the doorbell rings. It's Tony Martin.
Why, Martin, come in. You're the first one, but the other boys should be here any minute. My, you look stunning.
Well, how can you say that? You know I'm a mess.
Oh.
I've been downtown shopping all morning.
Yes, and I see you bought yourself a new hat.
This one? New?
Yes.
Oh, you silly boy.
What?
The same one I had last spring, made over. Remember?
Oh.
I bought it to match my gray tweed formal with the pink organdy lapel.
Say, do you mind if I try it on?
Of course not. Here.
There. Now, what do you think?
Oh, Morgan, it's positively perky on you.
Oh.
Makes your face look so much thinner.
Oh, thanks.
By the way, who all is playing bridge with us this afternoon?
Well, now, let's see. First of all, there's Meredith Wilson.
Oh, him?
What's the matter? Don't you like Wilson?
Oh, he talks too much. Talk, 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 talk. Why, he would give an aspirin a headache. Say, tell me, how are he and his wife getting along? Any better?
Well, you know me. I don't like to say anything,
well,
but
me,
I've always...
Well, me well, either, but, Morgan, I often wonder what she saw in him, don't you?
Why, she worships the very ground his father discovered oil on. Oh, it's the door. Must be one of the other boys.
Well, hello, boys. It's only little me.
Why, Wilson, I've never seen you looking so young. Martin and I were just saying that you don't look a day older than when we were in college together.
Well, say, boys, I just saw Eddie Cantor, and what do you think?
Yes?
He says that Bing Crosby told him that Will Brown's wife is going to leave him.
Well, you do, for heaven's sake. Well, it's really no surprise to me. If I told you what I know about her...
Oh,
it's...
go on.
Say, Morgan, who else is going to play cards with us today?
Bob Young.
Oh, him.
Why, what's the matter with Young? I think he's a lovely bridge player. He and I had a couple of the other boys played bridge last week at the Turkish Baths. It was men's night.
You played bridge at the Turkish Baths?
Well, I'll tell you how it happened. When we got there, we found there was only one masseur between the four of us. So we decided to play bridge to see who'd win the rubber.
Oh, Morgan, I almost forgot.
Yeah?
I have a TL for you.
Oh, goody, 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 gander. What is it?
No. You have to tell me one first.
Well, I won't tell you till you tell me. Now, don't be a meanie.
Oh, well. All right. Here it is. Hanley Stafford said you looked lovely in your dinner coat last night.
Well, he did. That's nice.
Mm-hmm. Say, who is Hanley going with now? Anyone?
Yes, anyone. He's been turned down so much he feels like a bed cover.
Oh, that must be Young.
Hello, man.
Oh, hello, Young.
I'm sorry I'm late, but we have a new maid, and you know what that means.
Tell me, Young, how's the baby?
Awfully cranky lately, Frank. He's teething. I left him with a nurse. The first time I've had to get out teething, you know how that is.
Oh, you bet I do.
Say, do we?
And the maid and nurse are so busy with the children that I had to fix Betty's breakfast myself this morning. I made a terrible mistake. I gave her soap flakes instead of post-toasties.
Was she mad?
Mad? Why, when I left the house, she was still foaming at the mouth.
Well,
oh,
boys,
no.
What do you say? What do you say? Shall we play a little bridge?
Well, yes, sure. Morgan, can I trouble you for a glass of water? I'll get it myself if you'll tell me where.
Oh, no. I'll go out and get it. I want to see how my cake's getting along.
Say, I don't like to say this, because you know me, I never knock anything or anybody, but isn't this room the most atrocious thing you ever saw?
You know, I really wanted to get that glass of water myself. I was just dying to see his kitchen. Quiet, here he comes back.
Here, Wilson, here's your glass of water, nice and cool.
Oh, thanks, Scads.
Well, we're ready to play bridge. How much will we play for?
Oh, what's the difference? How about a 40th of a cent?
Well, that's a little high, isn't it? How about an 80th?
Well, that suits me. By the way, which is higher, aces or kings?
Kings. Now, who bids first?
What are these funny little things here, clubs?
Say, there's a wonderful sale of nightgowns downtown.
Oh, is there? I'll have to go down.
Now, come on, boys, let's play bridge. I bid three hearts.
Two spades.
I bid one club.
Well, I'll bid the half of no trump.
Oh, that's for me. I'm expecting a call. Hello? Who?
Oh, Wilson, it's for you. Really? Well, now, I just wonder who the... Hello? Oh, hello. No! Well, the boys are all here. We'll be right over.
What,
boys,
what?
Jack Benny's going to be a father.
Well, imagine at his age.
Well, let's go right over and give him a few hints.
Maybe we can give him a shower.
Sure, that's the right thing to do.
Let's go right over. It doesn't
matter. Ladies and gentlemen, next 30, Gala Thanksgiving Show. America's number one family, the Hardys, in person. Lewis Stone, Mickey Rooney, Cecilia Parker, Ann Rutherford, Faye Holden, and Tony Martin, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Meredith Wilson. Tell your friends and be with us. In the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. This is Bob Young saying good night until next Thursday. Attention, good news friends in Chicago. Freddie Bartholomew will appear in person at the Oriental Theater, Chicago, for 1 week beginning tomorrow, Friday, November 18th. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, why don't I take a moment right now for a preview of those fine mystery and adventure dramas that'll be coming our way on CBS Radio this Sunday.
The world is listening to OTR now.
Well, first, of course, there's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, who'll be telling you about a case that involves a beautiful blonde, a shaggy dog, and this will interest you, Muriel, an over-talkative parrot. That's the case Johnny calls the Murdered Mugwump Matter.
Then, suspense brings you the electrifying tale entitled 115 Volts AC and DC, starring the late Captain Marvel.
Also, in the package, you'll find Paladin, whose famous card reads, "Have gun, will travel." Sunday, he'll be riding to the aid of a grizzled recluse who promptly puts a slug through him.
Not to mention Gunsmoke, who celebrated U.S. Marshal Day on, will be taking a breather. Next Sunday's Gunsmoke will be devoted entirely to a smooching session between the good marshal and Dodge City Kitty.
All right, now, don't get excited, Chester.
All right, Mr. Dillon.
Now, remember, all four of these top mystery and adventure dramas will be coming your way Sunday on CBS Radio, so be sure to be listening.
I think the program department is pulling our leg. I've heard a lot of synopses in my time, but those sound pretty peculiar to me.
Well, you may have a point there. Guess we'll just have to listen, I reckon, come Sunday.
You're listening to the OTR Now radio program.
Welcome back to the program. We're going to take a visit with the night editor. We don't know the exact date of this program. It's from 1945. It's called Pass the Peanuts.
Edwards, the coffee with the extra flavor lift, brings you Night Editor.
Now, let's play the second rewrite from the police department.
Sorry, boy.
Hello, City Bank.
Night Editor with Hal Burdick telling us another of his famous stories from the newsroom. Tonight, a yarn that brings back that old favorite, Adrian P. Covington, and a mystery story titled, Pass the Peanuts.
Adrian laid one big hand on the young ranchman's shoulder.
You sit tight now, son. The little fool clues are beginning to show up. I want to have a talk with this Dr. Smith and his wife, who didn't go to the dance last night. And then... then I'm going to town and buy me some of those good assorted nut meats.
Well, phones are ringing, teletypes chattering, and presses roaring. And the morning bulldog edition of the big metropolitan newspaper has been put to bed. At last, the night editor has a chance for a brief breathing spell, and Hal is heading down the corridor to the little kitchen off the home economics department. Just as he enters the home economics department, in comes a little...
Just in time, boss. Coffee's on.
Well, good, Bobby. Good.
There you are. Carefully made, steaming hot.
And Edwards, I take it, from the jar on the table, which makes it unanimous.
Ah, boy. Yeah, I can use that, Bobby.
I saw you leaving the office earlier tonight. Thought maybe you were sneaking out for coffee without me.
No. No, I wanted to get to that little nut store down the street before it closed and buy a box of assorted nut meats to send a friend of mine. Someone you've heard about, in fact. Adrian P. Covington.
You mean the Adrian P. Covington?
Yeah.
The Man Mountain detective of Jennifer
County? That's right, Bobby. I send him a box every once in a while. Sort of a standing joke between us. Going back to one of his experiences.
His experience. Look, Hal, if this is an Adrian story you've never told me, give out with it. Come on, right now.
Well, it's an Adrian story, Bobby. Happened a number of years ago on Gil Lyman's Dude Ranch up in Jennifer County. Adrian was away from the county seat when the report of a jewel robbery at Gil's ranch came in early that morning. It was after lunch when he finally arrived at the Deluxe Cabin bungalow, occupied by a Mrs. Charing, a dowager-like woman, and her daughter. Two sheriff's deputies had been there since before daylight working on the case, but a tall man, somewhere in his middle 30s and identified as Elbert Thomas, Mrs. Charing's nephew, seemed to be in charge. There's really nothing for you chaps to do. He leaned heavily on a cane, obviously protecting a bandaged ankle. I've telephoned the Western office of the insurance company. They're sending an experienced investigator to take charge. Adrian rolled mentally with that verbal jab and came up smiling.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Mr. Thomas. Yeah. Still, as a county detective, I have to know the facts. Gil, suppose you tell me.
The young ranch owner made it brief. The night before, there'd been a dance at the main lodge. Unwisely, perhaps, Mrs. Charing chose to wear a diamond and sapphire bracelet and matching earrings. She returned to the cabin a little ahead of her daughter. Hearing her daughter come in a few minutes later, she left her bedroom and crossed the living room to the daughter's bedroom to chat a minute before retiring, leaving the jewels on a vanity in her room. She was with her daughter not more than 5 minutes. When she returned to her own room, the bracelet and earrings were gone. Gil's face was drawn with lack of sleep and worry. But we've checked the whereabouts of every guest and ranch hand on the place at that hour, Adrian, and they're all in the clear. Most of them were in the main lodge, few of them in their cabins. Dr. and Mrs. Smith, an elderly couple, were asleep. Mr. Thomas here had been in his cabin all evening because of his injured ankle.
Yeah. How'd you hurt it, Mr. Thomas? out fishing, stepped on a rock, twisted it. Yeah. Oh, that can be mighty painful. Yep. Yeah, I recollect once when I was... That's quite unimportant. We have a thief to catch. To Adrian, the words were thinly coated with ice. Obviously, some outsider knew about the jewels. He stood by the window, watching to see where my aunt kept them, planning to get them when she was asleep. When she went out of the room, it was only a matter of a moment to step over the low sill, get them, and be on his way. There are no footprints or clues of any sort.
Oh, sure, Mr. Thomas. Yeah, there's always clues, and mostly some fool little thing you'd never think was important. Let's have a look around.
For the next half hour, Adrian's big bulk moved heavily around the rooms. He asked questions, roamed outside the cabin, even some distance along the paths. Finally, he came back to the living room.
Yeah, this looks like a tough one to crack. Maybe your experienced investigator will have more luck.
Now his eyes centered on a bowl of assorted nut meats on a coffee table.
Say, those look good. Where'd you get them?
The daughter answered, her voice a trifle chilly. I got them in town yesterday when I drove in to get the bandaging for my cousin's ankle. Does it matter? Adrian picked up the bowl.
Mrs. Chang?
No, thank you. I never eat them.
You, miss?
Neither do I.
Well, mind if I help myself? I'm mighty fond of them.
Look, old chap, the nephew broke in. Why don't you take the bowl and find yourself a shady spot and sit down quietly and spend the afternoon eating them?
Well, now, by gollies, I could come pretty near doing it.
He poked around among the nut meats for a moment, then asked quickly,
Who'd you have for visitors last evening?
No one. Not from the time my daughter got home, just before the dinner hour. He stood there looking down at the nut bowl, giving it an almost studied scrutiny. Finally, he helped himself to a generous handful and looked up, smiling.
Well, guess there's nothing more I can do for you folks. I'll leave the deputies here to work with the insurance investigator when he arrives. If there's anything more I can do, you let me know.
As Gil Lyman followed the big detective outside, Adrian laid one hand on his shoulder.
Sit tight, Gil. The little fool things are beginning to show up.
Where are you going now, Adrian?
I want to have a little talk with this Dr. Smith and his wife, who didn't go to the dance last night. And then...
He pulled one eye into a knowing wink.
Then I'm going to go to town and get me some of those good nut meats.
It was late afternoon when Adrian returned, carrying a sizable cardboard box. He invited himself to have dinner at Gil's table, then ambled off in the direction of the kitchen lodge. Gil was aware of the detective's intense interest later as groups of people took their places at surrounding tables. When all the dinner guests had been seated for several minutes, Adrian suddenly pushed back, saying,
I'm leaving you, Gil. There's one in the cabins I want to have a little look at while everybody's at dinner, but later meeting up at Mrs. Chern's, and bring her and the daughter and the nephew along with you.
The nephew's voice was chill with irony when they assembled later in the cabin. Well, I suppose you're going to tell us that, you've solved the crime.
Well, no, not quite, but maybe I'm getting warm. I'd like to tell you my theory.
He picked out another nut meat or two, nibbled on them.
Yeah. Now, first off, the way the robbery was done. It hit me this morning. No thief would be fool enough to stand outside that front window casing the job where other folks strolling home from the dance might see him, including the daughter who'd come along later.
Well, quite remarkable.
Yeah, ain't it, though? Likewise, he couldn't have come in the front door whilst Mrs. Charon was in her daughter's room because she was sitting where she'd seen him. Only one other answer. Fella must have been hiding in the house before she got home. Maybe in that little luggage closet yonder. Figuring to wait till Mrs. Charon was sound asleep and then sneak into her room and get the sparklers. But he has run a luck. She went into her daughter's room to chat, and whilst she's there, in he sneaks and gets them. And later, while they're back in Mrs. Charon's room all excited looking for the jewels, he leaves by way of the side window in the daughter's room. What's more, I figure he was no outsider, but somebody right here on the place. Well, whilst I'm reaching that conclusion, I run onto one of those fool little things that tells me he probably was in here waiting for some time before she got home. Came in earlier when everybody was at the dance, and he wouldn't be seen.
Yes, I suppose he left a cigar stub lying around. Again, the nephew's voice was icy.
No. No, he was too smart for that. Weren't you?
Every eye in the room followed Adrian's gaze to the nephew's face.
They saw it redden, then go starkly pale. "And just what do you mean by that, my fat friend? Wouldn't object to us searching your person, would you?" The answering laugh was supercilious. "Oh, well, of course not. Search all you like. Would you care to have me go in the other room and undress?" No, just like to have a look at that twisted ankle." Thomas was on his feet, backing away. "Don't you dare touch my ankle, you clumsy oaf. Get away from me." There was fear in his face now. He raised the cane threateningly, but the deputies had him to the shoulders and were pushing him back into the chair while Gil moved in to help hold him. Now Adrian's big fingers were tearing at the bandage, unwrapping it as he went on.
"Been interested in that ankle ever since I found out you insisted on binding it up yourself when Dr. Smith offered to do it for you."
Fold after fold came loose while the others held the struggling man. Then sharp exclamations as pinned deep within the wrappings, the sparkling jewels came into view.
"Quite a swelling, ain't it? And not a bad idea to fake a twisted ankle to fix a doggone near perfect hiding place. Hit me all of a sudden when me and the boys were searching his cabin during the dinner hour."
"But, Elbert," Mrs. Charing's voice was choked with amazement, Why would you do such a thing?"
"Reckon I can answer that, Miss Charing, based on a couple of long-distance phone calls made this afternoon. Your nephew needed big money to cover some gambling debts."
Over the nephew's shrill protest, Gil's voice demanded, "But whatever made you suspect him, Adrian?"
"Oh, number of things, Gil. But mostly..."
His eyes led their attention to the coffee table.
"Mostly that bowl and nut meats."
"Well, you mean to say you found a clue in that, Adrian?"
"Well, as you might say. And noticed this morning they'd been pretty well nibbled at, though neither of the ladies liked them, and there'd been no guests in the cabin. That bore out my theory. The thief was hiding in here for some time, and not daring to smoke, helped himself to the nut bowl. Then, poking around among them, I discovered something else that caused me to set a little trap to test my ideas. Same being, with the help of the head waitress, to have a bowl of nut meats put on each table at dinner tonight. When this fella just poked round in the bowl on his table and pushed him aside without hardly touching him, well, I was pretty middling sure I had him.
But I still don't get it, Adrian." Adrian's face took on a solemn St. Bernardish look.
"Fellow who sat here last night had one human frailty that I have, Gil, as I found out when I started to help myself out of that bowl this afternoon. Put a dish of assorted nuts in front of me, and I'll poke around among them till I've picked out all the cashews and almonds and toasted pecans and such, and let the peanuts go, which same this scoundrel did last night, leaving none for me when I come along.
But the trap, Adrian." Adrian's face was lighted by an owlish grin.
"Bowl on his table tonight had nothing but peanuts in it. When he couldn't find his favorites, he lost interest, which pretty well convinced me he was the crook I was a-looking for."
He paused for dramatic effect. Then,
"Now, ain't that the darndest fool little clue you ever did hear of?"
Speaking of being particular and picking out the choicest things to enjoy, if you'll take home some rich, roaster-fresh Edwards coffee from your grocer's tomorrow, you'll discover that Edwards gives you a delightful extra flavor lift. Why? Well, because Edwards is still processed in small batches, the slow, painstaking, time-tested way. For example, the fine Central and South American coffee beans used in Edwards are actually selected for size, shape, and color, to make sure they meet the strict Edwards standards. Then, every pound of rich Edwards coffee is carefully and expertly blended by flavor instead of by weight under the personal supervision of Mr. Dwight Edwards himself. But that's not all. Edwards is thermally roasted to bring out the full, natural coffee flavor and ground only at the store when you buy to assure absolute freshness. Try Edwards coffee for an extra flavor lift. Your money refunded if you don't thoroughly enjoy it. Edwards Coffee is featured at all Safeway stores.
Well, Hal, we'll be looking forward to hearing from Adrian again someday. But for now, how about next week's yarn?
Kathleen Donovan didn't know that Big Con Dara had a passenger in his highway truck the night he stopped at her service station high on the mountain road. A passenger wanted by the police and ready to shoot his way out of a tight corner. But she did know something was wrong, and she reacted in a surprising way. It's titled Schedule Subject to Change, a story in which romance plays an important part. I hope you'll all be with us in the newsroom next week for the telling of it. Good night.
Be sure to listen next week at this same time when Hal Burdick brings us another of his famous newsroom yarns. This is Bill Baldwin saying goodnight for Edwards Coffee.
He's a ventriloquist on the radio. How do you know he's not moving his lips?
Who cares? Leave me alone.
The world is listening to OTR now.
Welcome back to the OTR Now radio program. Luella Parsons was very influential in Hollywood. She was often feared and hated by individuals, mostly actors, whose career she could negatively impact via her radio show and newspaper columns. Here's her radio show from January 7, 1951. The guest is John Wayne.
She's walking down the aisle, another Woodbury bride. She uses Woodbury soap because it's gentle and mild. And her hands are smooth and lovable from Jergens Lotion Care.
It's the lotion that's preferred
by more women everywhere.
Jergens Lotion and Woodbury Soap present The Luella Parsons Show.
What important star has been secretly married?
What famous entertainer may be on General Eisenhower's staff?
What actress and opera singer cannot locate her husband to divorce him?
You will be given the answers transcribed from Chicago by your Jergens Woodbury reporter, Luella Parsons, motion picture editor of International News Service and the Hearst Papers.
Luella will also bring you an interview with John Wayne.
But first, the Hollywood headlines. Luella Parsons.
A big hello from Chicago, where the weather is very cold, but very stimulating. And now for my first exclusive. Today, Burgess Meredith confirmed to me my exclusive story that he is secretly wed to dancer Kasia Sundstrom. He refused to comment further. Paulette Goddard is ex-wife, and he have never signed that property settlement. And that could be the reason Meredith tried to keep his marriage so secret. Greer Garson's millionaire bridegroom, Buddy Fogelson, very secretly entered the Los Angeles hospital, and his red-haired bride has practically moved there. I'm glad to say it's not another heart attack. Buddy wasn't feeling well, so he went in for a checkup. The Leland Haywards have a date with a stork. He's the producer of the fabulous South Pacific, and she's the former Slim Hawks, picked on most best-dressed lists. Leland has three children by Margaret Sullivan, and Slim has a daughter by director Howard Hawks. The attorneys for Elizabeth Taylor and Nikki Hilton are huddling, and the divorce will be ready for filing by Tuesday. It's all a perfectly amicable arrangement, with Elizabeth asking for no money and Nikki giving up all claims to community property. Scotty Beckett, the big-eyed boy who played Al Jolson as a child in the Jolson story, is again a married man. He was married last week in Mexico to Sonny Vickers. Although Scotty is only 22, this is his second marriage. Whispers are fast and furious that Charmin Douglas, daughter of Ambassador Douglas and Princess Margaret's pal, may fly to Australia. The reason, of course, is Peter Lawford, who is still mad about the girl. Charmin, who was in Hollywood for Mike Romanoff's New Year's party, loves our movie town. I'm so happy to say that our Hollywood USO camp shows will be reactivated shortly to provide entertainment for our servicemen. Abe Lasvogel, head of the William Morris Agency, who was in charge of this operation in World War II, will again direct activities. This is a very worthy cause, and the work Abe and the Hollywood actors did in the last war cannot be too highly praised. The real reason Ann Jeffries, the singer, cannot marry Andy Parrocino, wealthy California wine grower, is because she cannot locate her estranged husband to get a divorce. Ann married Major Joseph Robert Serrano in 1945, and he has not been seen for several years. Even the high-priced detectives Ann's prospective bridegroom has hired cannot find the missing husband. 27 million Catholics have been asked by Cardinal Spellman to stay away from The Miracle, a motion picture directed by Roberto Rossellini. The Cardinal describes the film as indecent and immoral. I'm very sure 27 million other Americans not in the Catholic Church will agree with His Eminence. There seems to me to be no reason for showing a picture as distasteful as this film. The theme is the seduction of an idiotic Italian woman by a stranger she believes to be St. Joseph. This is not only immoral and irreligious, but offensive to all right-thinking people. General Ike Eisenhower has always liked and admired Arthur Godfrey, and I am reliably informed, although I must give it as a rumor, that Arthur has been offered a job on the General's naval staff. If Godfrey accepts, this means giving up his radio, TV, and all the numerous Godfrey accounts. Well, with Artie's sense of humor and personality, he certainly'd be a big help. Marie Wilson, who has made dumbness pay off, I mean, of course, on the screen and air, is in love again. This time it's Garwood Vann, orchestra leader, whom she met when she was in Las Vegas getting a divorce from Alan Nixon. Early yesterday morning in Los Angeles, Edna Skelton Barzagi, ex-wife of comedian Red Skelton, underwent a very serious major operation. Red, who is playing here in Chicago, kept Edna, who still writes all his material, in good spirits by telephoning her his latest gags. Yesterday, I was in Rochester, Minnesota, the town put on the map by the Mayo brothers. It was blanketed with deep snow and looked like a Grandma Moses painting. Interesting that Mrs. Mayo, wife of young Dr. Charles Mayo, is a career woman and is in charge of this network radio station in Rochester. Actor Douglas Kennedy is getting married. Last year, his wife created a mild sensation when she divorced him to marry their next-door neighbor. The new Mrs. Kennedy is a Santa Barbara socialite named Jean Norwood. They'll have a ready-made family of 6 children. He has 4, and Jean has 2. I'm glad I don't have to pay that shoe bill. I wouldn't like to be the first to say so, but rumors in New York are that the newlyweds, Faye Emerson and Skitch Henderson, are having their troubles. What, already? The first mama-daughter recording combination is Catherine Grayson and her 2-year-old Patty Kay. Patty will sing Baby It's Cold Outside with her mother. Look out, Crosby kids, you're in for some competition. And now for Marvin Miller.
There's a bargain waiting at your favorite cosmetic counter. It's a handy fingertip dispenser, a free gift with every dollar-sized bottle of Jergens lotion you buy. Just press the dispenser. The right amount of smoothing, softening Jergens lotion flows into your palm. It keeps your hands velvety, attractive, goes on in seconds. Get this beauty bargain tomorrow. A dollar bottle of Jergens lotion plus a free dispenser, both only 89 cents plus tax.
She uses Jergens lotion. It's so perfect for hand. Stars use it 7 to 1, 'cause Jergens lotion's so grand. Let your hands be smooth and lovable from Jergens lotion care.
It's the lotion that's preferred
by more women everywhere.
And here again is Luella Parsons.
A year ago tonight, John Wayne was on this show. He had just jumped from 33rd place to 2nd in box office rating. Tonight, John, who is our guest again, has even bettered that record. He has won 4 popularity polls, including the 19th annual Motion Picture Herald poll. That means he is the biggest money-making star, and more people have seen him in 1950 than any other actor. Tonight, John, on behalf of the Motion Picture Herald, I'm delighted to present you with the winner's scroll. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, Luella, and I'm certainly honored by all this. And I don't mind telling you, I'd feel I was a real big man if this was just based on something.
Now, what kind of a fake modesty is this? John, I don't know any actor who's had a more solid role of hits than you. Red River, Wake of the Red Witch, Fort Apache, She Wore a Yellow Ribbon.
Yes, I've been very lucky, Luella, but it's for 1950 that I'm getting this flattering scroll. So you just answer one simple question, please. Which of my 1950 pictures did you like best?
Well, let's see. I guess that must have been The Sands of Iwo Jima. And don't tell me you didn't like that, too. After all, it won you an Academy nomination.
Yes, but Iwo Jima came out the last week of 1949.
Oh, of course it did. But that was to make you eligible for Academy consideration.
I was delighted, even if I didn't tote home an Oscar.
Well, maybe you'll tote home an Oscar for Operation Pacific. I'm told Jack Warner did all right by you in that.
Yes, it opens January 9th, 1951. I'll mention the date. It might sell a few tickets. But go on now, about 1950.
Well, I know you made Jet Pilot, Real Brandy, and The Flying Leatherneck during 1950.
But none of them was released in time to affect this poll.
Oh, I understand. Your popularity was based on 1949 pictures, which makes it even more of an honor.
Well, thank you. And there's one other thing.
That helped you win the poll. What was it?
My ulcers.
That I can't bear. Success has given a big, strong guy like you ulcers.
No, ma'am. Success has taken them away. You see, Luella, when I was back there being number 33 or much less at the box office, I had the biggest crop of ulcers west of the Mississippi. All earned from minding everybody else's business.
I suppose you mean telling the director how to direct and the writer how to write.
Oh, I didn't stop at that kindergarten stuff. I told the extras how to dress, the cameraman how to photograph, and the electricians how to light. Well, I carried things so far that one day walking down a strange Beverly Hills street, I get into an argument with a strange man over the way a strange but beautiful woman was parking her car. He said, "Isn't that just like a woman driver?" And I said, "You'll have to apologize for insulting this lady." And then the lady said, "You leave my husband alone." So I started minding my own business.
Well, John, somewhere along the way, you learned to relax and take people as they are, including yourself. Incidentally, what do you think is the biggest thing you have obtained from your success beside the ulcer cure?
Well, the biggest thing that I've got out of being a so-called star is the friendliness of the public. A character like myself has to go into Oklahoma City, let's say, and you don't know anybody. But all of a sudden, you find you have thousands of friends there. You don't have to go to any parties and break the ice. It's broken for you. And you're wined and you're dined, and the only payoff the public demands is that you smile.
I could point out that you've done much more than smile. Suppose I mention the hard work I know you constantly do with the Motion Picture Alliance in its strong fight against communism.
Well, I feel we can fight communism here if our kids are fighting it all over the world. And I feel like sounding off right now. May I?
I don't know anyone who'd want to stop you, so go ahead and make with the language.
Well, language is exactly what I want to talk about. I think all of us in this country should study the word capitalism. I associate capitalism with freedom, which our country stands for and gives in more abundance than any other land. Therefore, I suggest we give the word its due honor in our minds and allow it its important position in the administration of our government.
Bravo, John. Well spoken. We need men like you in our industry. I'm glad I've had this chance to present this scroll to you.
Well, Luella, when you love the industry in which you work, and it's been kind to you, and it finally honors you in this manner, you know it has to be my happiest moment. We all know there's a great deal of luck attached to this sort of thing, but you can't hit a home run every time at bat. But I can assure you that as long as they keep putting me in pictures, they'll be getting my best effort. Good night, Luella.
Good night, John. Happy New Year, and may you win even more scrolls next year. And now here's Marvin Miller again.
Ever notice how rough, sandpapery heels and legs snag your sheer stockings? Take this tip, and your stockings will last longer. Smooth yourself all over with Jergens lotion after every bath. Be satin smooth from hands to heels, thanks to two ingredients in Jergens doctors use to soften skin. And remember, a handy fingertip dispenser is your free gift with every dollar-sized bottle of Jergens, both for 89 cents plus tax.
She uses Jergens lotion. It's so perfect for hands. Stars use it 7 to 1, 'cause Jergens lotion's the brand. Let your hands be smooth and lovable from Jergens lotion care.
It's the lotion that's preferred
by more women everywhere.
And here is last-minute news.
Just heard from Palm Springs, California, that one Paul Neil Lewis was arrested there today. While working for a mail-order house, Lewis stole $82,000 from housewives who sent 50 cents to buy a certain type of kitchen knife. The reason for the popularity of the knife is that Arthur Godfrey offered it as a reward on one of his shows. Goes without saying, Arthur knew nothing of the gentleman's activities. Orchestra leader Tommy Dorsey will be a papa in the spring. His wife is a former Jane New. As soon as his honeymoon is over, Henry Fonda returns to the hospital for another session with his knee. He has postponed his return to Mr. Roberts. Gertrude Lawrence has adopted a 6-year-old French orphan boy. She already has a married daughter. And now Marvin Miller.
A world-famous camera artist photographed the wedding of beautiful New York Deb Diane Farrell and Herbert Miller, Jr. But no camera could capture the loveliness of her glowing Woodbury complexion. Try Woodbury facial soap yourself. See how gently its rich, creamy lather freshens and smooths your skin. For Woodbury soap contains the very same beauty ingredient used in fine face creams for skin smoothing. Even if your complexion's extra sensitive, you'll find Woodbury soap mild enough for you.
This is a Luella Parson saying that's all for tonight, but I'll see you next week when my guests will be our most famous newlyweds, Betty Davis and Gary Merrill. Good night, Ducky dear.
And this is Marvin Miller saying goodnight for Jergens Lotion for soft, smooth, romantic hands and Woodbury Facial Soap for the skin you love to touch. This transcribed program came to you from Chicago.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
We have some time for a second program, Federal Agent. All we know is it's from 1944. This episode's called Nick Sarno is Up for Parole.
Federal Agent. Federal Agent, backbone of today's crusade against crime. Scotland Yard, French Sûreté, American Bureau of Investigation, Royal Canadian Mounted Police. These men are joined in a modern crusade against crime. Officer of the American Bureau of Investigation enters a parole board meeting in a Midwestern city just as its members are about to receive parole applicants.
How are you, Mr. Parker? Hope I'm not late.
Not at all, Taylor. I want you to meet my colleagues, Mrs. Henderson, Mrs. Logan, Mr. Haviland, and Mr. Gates. This is Ed Taylor, the federal man who sent Nick Sarno up.
How do you do? How do you do? And to tell the truth, I'm going to try to see that Nick stays up here for a while.
We understand how you feel, Taylor. But, of course, Sarno was only sent up on an income tax violation. Now, after
I know all that. But I'd like to remind all of you ladies and gentlemen that this man is a killer, a murderer. He comes up before you for parole today, and my chief has instructed me to have this chat with you.
You aren't intimating.
I'm intimating nothing. We know Nick Sarno shot and killed Johnny Collins, a government man assigned to watch him. The fact that Sarno had a good lawyer and beat the rap cuts no ice with us. He's in here because he didn't pay Uncle Sam income taxes on his gang activities. Now, here he's going to stay if
We shall judge the matter on its merits, Mr. Taylor.
Sure, but just remember that when that man steps out of here, the fireworks are going to start for fair. There's a business competitor of Nick's by the name of Joe Polano who's kind of taken over while Nick's been cooling off in prison. Nick isn't going to take that sitting down, you know.
No, I dare say he won't. However, suppose we proceed with the business at hand. Bailiff, bring Miss Mason in.
What case is this?
Well, I don't know a great deal about the girl. The records show that she's been in for shoplifting.
Right this way, girlie.
Yeah.
You've served 18 months on a shoplifting charge.
That's right.
Your conduct has been exemplary, and I see no reason why this parole should not be granted. Have you any prospects for a position?
Yes, I have. If you only give me a chance, I'm sure I can get work. I'm not really a thief. I needed those clothes I took, honest. If you'll only...
Any objections? Parole granted.
Oh, you've been very kind. I can't tell you how I appreciate
what... That won't be necessary, young lady. Just be careful, and that will be appreciation enough.
Yes, sir.
All right, bailiff. Bring in Sarno.
How'd you make out, kid?
They granted my parole.
Swell. I told you they would, didn't I?
Uh-huh.
It's a cinch. What are you bawling about?
Oh, I guess I'm so happy. I don't know what else to do but cry. I can walk out of here free now.
Sure. It's wonderful to be free. Helen, meet up with Mom.
Hello.
Pleased to know you.
Come on, Sarno. You're next.
Take your filthy paw off of my coat, screw. Wait around outside a while, kid. I got a hunch these brass monkeys ain't going to pull no fast ones on me and Mom. I got a car waiting. Take you back to town, huh?
Yeah, thank you.
All right, ugly man. It's your party. Come on, Mom.
All right, Sarno. We have your record here. Anything you wish to say before the board?
I ain't got very much to say except that I've been a model prisoner and I made up my mind that I ain't going to cause no trouble with nobody.
Is this lady your mother?
Yes, I'm his mother, Your Honor. And I want you to know that I can see where Nick has done a lot of wrong things in the past. But I had a talk with him. He never broke his word with me, and he promised to go straight.
I see. Can you be sure of that?
Oh, I can, Your Honor. Honest, I can. Nick's never done anything really wrong. His father was bad, clean through. I had to raise Nick all by myself. He was under bad influences for a long time, and oh, I just know that if you give my boy another chance, he'll go straight. Please give him another chance. Oh, tell him, Nick.
I promised her I'd go on a straight and narrow.
Mr. Taylor here was sent up by the Bureau of Investigation to look into your case, Arno. He seems to feel you'll make trouble if we give you a parole.
Hello, Taylor. No, I'm not making no trouble. I guess you mean about Joe Palano. That guy don't need to worry none. No. Sure, he moved in on all my shakedowns, but Mom here told you that I'm true with all that. Joe's welcome to what he's got. I'm leaving for Europe as soon as I get out.
Yeah, I'm making Nick go away and leave all this if you'll be kind and give him this freedom.
I'm against this parole under any circumstances. I haven't forgotten Johnny Collins, Nick.
No, you mustn't do this to Nick. He's going to be all right, I tell you. Oh, please, mister, this G-man is just against my boy because he put him here. He'll never say what's fair and right. Oh, never. You must believe me and Nick.
I say you shouldn't be given parole.
Unfortunately, that does not come under your jurisdiction, Mr. Taylor. Now then, are there any members of the board who wish to express comment as to why this man shall not be granted his parole? Very well. That's your answer, Taylor. Parole granted.
Now you guys just said something. Thanks, boys. Have a cigar? Come on, Mom. We got places to go. So long, Mr. Taylor.
Once again, the federal men are forced to keep close watch on Nick Sarno. But Agent Taylor's fears seem groundless. True to his promise, Nick sails for Europe and removes himself from the racket picture. And one day, just a few weeks later, the world is startled by another gangland killing. In the office of the FBI...
Hello, Taylor.
Hello.
What's new on the Palano killings?
They never had a chance. Palano and five henchmen mowed down like wooden soldiers.
Any ideas?
That's Nick Sarno. He kills that way. Mass executions are right down his alley.
I'd agree with you on that, except for one thing. I took your suggestion and wired the friend Surete and found out that Nick landed at Lave 3 days ago on schedule.
Well, you better cable the Surete again to put an anchor on the Bank of France. Nick's liable to bring it back with him. You know, it's funny. I just can't put this on anyone but Sarno. It's just as though he'd left his calling card.
Well, I think you're concentrating on Nick Sarno too much. Forget him and run down the men responsible for this job.
Look, I was down at local headquarters this morning, and I found out something you ought to know. Remember Al Hardy?
Hardy. Oh, yes. He's that blackmailer we chased all over the country a couple of years back.
Right. And he got back to town just a day or two after Nick Sarno was sprung.
Sarno again. Now listen, Taylor, I tell you...
But wait a minute. Los Angeles police notified the local authorities about his being here. For the past few years, Hardy's been in Hollywood working as a makeup man. He tried to blackmail a couple of actors and was fired.
All right, he was fired. So what?
Nick has a brother.
You're still talking in riddles.
All right, now suppose a makeup man fixed Nick's brother to look like him and put him on a boat and sent him to France. The records show the brother was the same build, same hair.
Oh, it's a fantastic theory, Taylor. Yes, but it would explain a lot of things. I wonder...
Yeah, sure, me too. I wonder where Nick Sarno's hiding out. He's been right here in town all the while.
Gambling that Agent Taylor's theory is the right one, the government men start to turn the city upside down in an attempt to locate the hiding racketeer. But through it all, entirely oblivious of what is happening from the safety of a small room above a candy store.
Did you see what the paper said about me, baby?
Yeah.
I'm having a swell time on the Riviera right now. You sure nobody followed you up here?
Yeah, I'm sure, but I'm getting sick and tired of sneaking in and out of here just because you...
Now listen, kid, listen. It ain't gonna be for much longer. I'm just laying low till a storm blows over, that's all.
Well, I'll have to admit you're awful clever about handling the whole thing.
Sure, sure. And you and me are going to make up for a lot of lost time as soon as I can blow this hole.
You sure you're in the clear?
They've tried to hang a lot of bum raps on me, but I'm too smart for them. There was one Dick thought he had me, a guy named Collins.
Did you get him, Nick?
Sure, he knew too much. But these guys ain't going to pin it on me.
Yeah, but you've been cooped up in this little apartment for weeks. I don't know how you stand it. You never take me anyplace.
But I'm telling you, just be patient for a while.
Oh, can't you manage a picture show tonight, Nick? Please.
Oh, it'd be taking an awful chance.
For my sake, Nick?
Yeah, Nick, be just enough of a sucker over a frill like you to pull something like that.
Shut up. You're getting on my nerves, Tilly. Plenty. You play my old lady in front of a parole board, and you've been trying to tell me what to do ever since.
And you need just that. You're still wet behind the ears and don't know it.
I'm going to beat your ears down if I hear another yep out of you. Get your coat on, kid. We're going out to a movie.
Gee, thanks, Nick. I'll be ready in a minute.
Let's get in fast before anybody gets a gander at me.
Why, but nobody's seen you yet.
Tickets, please.
Here you are. Come on, let's go inside.
Nick,
Yeah?
I don't want to pull out of my nose. I'll be right back.
Oh, well, listen. I better get a seat. Meet you down in front in the third row, okay?
Okay. Is there a phone booth in this theater?
Yes, ma'am. Right over there.
All right. Hello? Operator? Operator, I want to talk to the Bureau of Investigation. Quickly, please.
Said he was in the theater with her.
Well, we can't risk going in after him. There's liable to be some shooting, and I don't want any innocent bystander plugged full of holes.
Well, I've got the boys surrounding the whole building. He won't get away. I just hope that Helen will be all right.
Well, she can take care of herself. Now, let's not muff Sarno. Well, it's 11:15. What time did the box office girl say the show lets out?
Right about now. He ought to be... Oh, there he is. Watch it. There they are now.
All right. Let's close in slowly. And be careful. He'll shoot if he has to.
Hey, that wasn't a bad picture at all.
No.
That dame sure has got something. But you got it too, baby.
Oh, thanks, Nick.
What's the matter? Who are you looking for? You don't need to worry anymore now. Them G guys... Hey.
Huh?
Them guys over there coming this way. Come here, you.
Nick, what are you doing? Let me go.
Oh, no, I'm not. Something tells me you tried to pull a little double cross, sister.
Nick,
Well, let the boys fire away. As long as I got you in front of me for protection.
Oh.
Here's a little starter for him.
Nick!
He's up there in front of him.
Nick.
We've got to get to him. Keep yourself over his head.
I'll try to circle around and back him, Chief. He's liable to kill her right away.
All right, go ahead.
Boys are kind of closing in, baby. Maybe they're going to get me for keeps this time. But before I blow
Nick,
out...
you wouldn't...
Oh, no. I'm keeping this one last bullet for you, see? There ain't nothing lower than a stool pigeon, a double-crosser. Well, you're going to get just what that wise guy Collins got, see?
That's good to know, Sarno. Drop that gun.
Why, you punk!
Oh.
Yes, for it, little boy. Everything all right, Helen?
Yes, now it is. Thanks.
Now, pick him up, boys. Get him out of here. Nice work, Helen. You too, Taylor. You're due for a nice stretch this time, Sarno.
That's only what you think.
Maybe. But you were trapped by proxy. I want you to meet this young lady who's responsible for your arrest. You should know her. You murdered her husband, Mrs. Johnny Collins.
Thank you.
Listen for our next presentation of thrilling stories related to this modern crusade as each nation calls upon its chief bulwark against crime. Federal agent.
The only homely person in radio, Jack.
Fred, television will ruin half of the actors in radio.
Oh, brother, wait till people get a load of those kissers on information, please.
You're listening to the OTR Now radio program.
You're listening to the OTR Now radio program, and when we say we play classic and the greatest old-time radio, here's our proof, because we're playing an episode of Dragnet. Dragnet, we've talked about it before. You know it's an unbelievable program that was way ahead of its time. And it is still copied today. We talked about how Law and Order is Dragnet. These episodes are based on real cases from the Los Angeles Police Department. It is probably the most innovative show of its time. And, of course, the genius behind the program was Jack Webb. This program is from March 2nd, 1950. It's called The Big Kill. Let's listen to Dragnet.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. A police officer is shot down on the front steps of his home. There's no apparent motive for the shooting. The assailant escapes in a blue sedan. Your job, get him.
It's amazing how many long cigarette smokers are changing to Fatima. Here is the actual report.
From coast to coast, king-size Fatima has more than doubled its smokers.
Yes, more and more smokers every day are discovering that Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes.
Long cigarette smokers find Fatima has a much different, much better flavor and aroma.
Long cigarette smokers find that Fatima is extra mild because it's the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos superbly blended to make it extra mild.
So enjoy extra mild Fatima, best of all long cigarettes.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Sunday, May 23rd. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was off duty reporting back in on an emergency call. It was 5 minutes past 3 a.m. when I got to room 42, homicide.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. How is he?
He's dead.
Huh? Went kind of fast, huh?
I just got the call a couple of minutes ago. He died in the hospital.
Friday, Ben, let's go. Thad Brown's office.
All right.
How'd it happen, Skipper? I haven't got all the details. Guy used a shotgun, point blank. Fillmore didn't have a chance.
Chief of the detective's office, he got crime lab? Yeah, out there now. Right.
Chief Ronnie?
Down the hall with Captain White, intelligence office. Said to have you wait.
Okay, we'll be inside.
Right.
You want to fill us in, Skipper?
No, not much to tell. Fillmore was working the day watch at a robbery. He left work at 6 o'clock last night, drove home.
Yeah?
He had dinner, then he and his wife went to a show. He got home about 11:30, went to bed.
Yeah?
About 1:30 this morning, the front doorbell rang and Fillmore answered it. His wife said she heard him open the door, and there was a gunshot. She ran to the front door in time to see a guy jump in a car and drive away. Fillmore was lying on the porch, chest ripped open.
You say the guy used a shotgun?
Yeah.
No other information on the car he used?
Blue sedan, that's all the wife could tell us. She didn't get the license number. Said it looked like a new model car.
No physical evidence, sir.
Haven't found anything yet.
Here's the boss, Chief.
Elliot, you brief Friday in Romero?
Told him much as I know.
Any idea what the guy's motive was?
Revenge.
Any leads?
Just one. Lynn White Intelligence came up with it. A guy by the name of Jake Carver.
Not familiar.
He got out of Folsom 3 days ago. Served 7 years armed robbery.
Yeah.
Fillmore was the man who got Carver and sent him up. The time he was sentenced, Carver swore up and down he'd get Fillmore when he got out. Hot-headed punk.
Where do we look for Carver?
Already checked where he's supposed to be staying, not there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a list of guys he used to run with before he went to Folsom.
Thanks.
Let's see, Joe.
Here it is. Ralph Danton, Ernie Travis, Jaime Flores.
Carver been seen around town since he got out?
Once that we know of, in a bar out on Sunset Boulevard. Flores was with him.
Well, how about Travis and Danton? They still around?
Well, let's see. Travis went east 2 years ago. Danton's around. Still runs with Flores. That's where you start.
Flores?
Yeah.
Okay. Any reason?
Two. Flores' sister used to go with Carver.
Yeah?
Flores owns a blue sedan.
3:20 a.m. We checked Jaime Flores' last known address, the old 76 Hotel down in South Alameda. Flores had moved. His forwarding address was his mother's house, 1232 Alabama Street out in Boyle Heights. His mother told us Jaime was living on County View Avenue in Highland Park. 4:30 a.m., we located the address.
No garage here. Wonder where Jaime keeps his car.
Not parked on the street.
Yeah? What do you want?
Police officers.
Oh.
Like to talk to Jaime Flores?
Jaime? It's late. We're in bed.
It's important. We'd like to talk to him.
All right. Wait. I'll go get him up. Jaime. Come on, get up.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, Jaime. Cops at the door. I want to talk to you.
What did you say?
We want to talk to you.
Okay, baby. Yeah, officers. What can I do for you?
You, Jaime Flores.
That's right.
We're looking for Jake Carver. You know where he is?
Wish I did. I'm through with that guy.
Why? What's the matter?
He borrowed my car the day before yesterday. Said he'd only be gone a couple of hours. I'm still waiting.
You own a blue sedan, is that right?
Yeah, 48 Chevy. Why, did he crack it up?
Couldn't tell you. Do you have any idea where we can look for Carver?
If I did, I'd be looking myself.
Do you know if Carver's got a gun?
Why, had Punk pull a job?
Does he have a gun?
In the trunk of the car. I use it on hunting trips.
What kind?
Shotgun.
4:45 a.m. We got out a broadcast and an APB on Jake Carver, containing a complete description of the car and its license number. Roadblocks were set up on all main roads leading out of the city, and police details at the airports, bus depots, and the railroad terminals were alerted. All of the people whom Carver was known to have run with before he was sent to Folsom Penitentiary were rounded up and brought in for questioning. While Captain Elliott from Homicide supervised the interrogation, Ben went across the street to check with a coroner at the morgue. I contacted Lee Jones at the crime lab. 6 a.m., we met in Chief of Detectives Thad Brown's office.
Crime lab find anything?
Single footprint, that's all. Jones found it in one of the flower beds in front of Fillmore's home.
Is it tie-in?
Size 10. That's Carver's size.
Well, that'll help.
Is there any indication Carver might still be in the city?
No, there was a good 3 hours between the time Fillmore was shot and the roadblocks went up.
What about Carver's pals? Did they help any?
Well, Flores is the only one who admits seeing him since he got out.
What about Flores' sister, Dorothy?
She lives out in Long Beach, and Cenas and Burton are bringing her in now.
That guy, Flores, did you question him again, Elliot?
Yeah.
You satisfied with everything he told you that he knows?
That's right. He doesn't seem to be too close to Carver. No record of any correspondence with him while he was in Folsom.
How about the coroner's report, now?
Shotgun, close range, hit him hard.
Well, there's mug shots of Carver, they are?
Photocopy's still working on it. Turning out 2,000.
Excuse me. Brown speaking. Albert. Right. They got Dorothy Flores in the interrogation room. You want to talk to her, Elliot?
Ben, you and Joe talk to her. Tell Encinas and Burton to check in here. I got another angle I want them to start on.
Right, let's go, Joe. He must be as mad as a hatter. 3 days out of Folsom and he kills a cop.
Yeah, if it was him.
You got any other ideas?
You need more than a footprint. We got to find the gun and we got to prove that he used it.
Hi. You two gonna take over?
Yeah, Lloyd. You and Gil check in at the chief's office. The captain wants to see you.
Okay. You want the policewoman to stand by?
It's fine.
Let's go, Gil. See you guys later.
All right. Laura. You're Dorothy Flores?
Yeah.
You know why you're here?
Jake Carver. That's what they told me.
That's right. You know where he is?
No.
Have you seen Carver in the past 3 days?
Look, I don't want any part of the guy. He's nothing to me. He never was.
You used to go around with him, didn't you?
7 years ago, before he went to Folsom.
Mm-hmm. What happened to your eye, Miss Flores? Those bruises there on your arm.
Oh, we had a party. I fell and bumped myself.
Looks like a pretty new black eye. Did you have the party last night?
I told you, Jake's nothing to me. He's a crazy hothead. I don't want any part of him.
Was he around to see you last night?
I used to go with him, that's all. I don't care what happened to him.
You saw him last night, huh?
I didn't.
This is on a murder rap, Miss Flores.
I didn't want to see him. He came to my room. He forced his way in. I didn't want any part of him.
When was it?
Early this morning.
What time?
About 2 o'clock, maybe 10 after. He wanted money, acted like a crazy man. I told him I didn't have any money. He slugged me. That's how I got this mouse.
What do you want the money for?
He said he got the cop who sent him up. He had to get out of town. He took my purse. $48 in it.
Was he driving your brother's car?
Yeah. I didn't want any part of him. I got nothing in this.
Did he tell you where he was headed?
Mexico. He's got friends across the border. Tijuana.
All right. Stay with her, Ben.
And get a stenographer, too, will you?
Yeah.
Friday?
The Flores girl, Skipper. Carva saw her this morning. Admitted shooting Fillmore. She says he's headed south for Tijuana.
Maybe he stopped off on the way.
How do you mean?
The drugstore in San Pedro just held up. Owner was shot and killed.
Yeah?
The guy was driving a blue sedan.
An immediate alert was teletyped to the coastal town south of Los Angeles in the vicinity of San Pedro. The San Diego police were alerted, as were the Mexican authorities in Tijuana and other designated points of entry along the California-Mexico border. 7:50 a.m., Ben and I, together with Lloyd Barton and Al Shambra of Homicide, drove down to San Pedro and checked in with Lieutenant Maxwell at San Pedro Homicide.
What kind of a gun did the guy use, Lieutenant?
I checked the body. Looks like it could have been a .45.
No chance it might have been a shotgun?
No, not that kind of a wound.
Who saw the guy make his getaway?
My wife did. We live right across the street from the drugstore. Wife heard the shooting, ran to the window. She says it was a blue sedan.
She didn't see the license plate?
No. I got a look at the car before it disappeared. It looked like a Chevy to me.
There's been no sign of it since the roadblocks went up?
Not yet. It's pretty hard to understand.
How do you mean?
Take a look at the map here. Here's Palos Verdes and Clifton to the west. Roadblocks there.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Here's the roadblock to the north, just this side of Harbor City. Another one northeast, near Wilmington.
Yeah.
This one here, outside of Long Beach.
Had four roads to pick from.
They're all blocked off, huh?
No turnoffs, no detours. All the roads are under patrol.
You think he got south beyond Long Beach before the roadblocks went up?
Not a chance.
Yeah, it's hard to figure.
He could be hiding out somewhere along the way.
Hey, excuse me. This is Lieutenant Maxwell. Where? Okay, be right there.
Anything?
I found the car off the coast highway, blue Chevy sedan.
How about Carver?
Bloodstains in the front seat. That's all they found.
You are listening to Dragnet for the step-by-step solution to an actual police case. Here, step-by-step, are the reasons why Fatima has more than doubled its smokers from coast to coast.
Step 1. The name Fatima has always stood for the best in cigarette quality.
Step 2.
Long cigarette smokers discover Fatima has a much different, much better flavor and aroma.
Step 3.
Long cigarette smokers find Fatima extra mild. Fatima is the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make Fatima extra mild.
And that's why more and more smokers every day agree
it's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
Yes, the name Fatima on that golden yellow package is your insurance of an extra mild smoke.
So enjoy king-size Fatima, the best of all long cigarettes.
A.M. We found the blue Chevrolet sedan. It was lying overturned in a ditch just off a dead-end road on the edge of a grove of eucalyptus trees. Oil was still dripping from the crankcase. There were bloodstains on the upholstery in the front seat. In the glove compartment, We found two empty shotgun shells. Ben marked them with his initials for evidence and wrapped them in a handkerchief. The fingerprint men were called. We fanned out and started the search of the general area.
See if we can't pick up a trail in this eucalyptus grove here. Sure has got me beat.
What's that?
The car all smashed up back there, blood all over. The guy must have been hurt. How'd he get this far away from the car?
What makes you think he did get far?
Either that or he's hiding right under a nose.
Well.
No sign of a trail through here?
No, there's nothing. There's a clearing up ahead. Come on, let's cut through this brush here. Ben, come here.
Yeah.
Take a look. The trunk of this tree.
Brown smears on it. Blood?
Maybe. Look, higher up on the trunk there is the same thing. Wait a minute.
Up in the tree. Can you see anything up there?
No, the branches are pretty thick. Trees go pretty high up. Good 60 feet up there.
Come here, Joe.
Yeah?
Follow my hand. Oh, no, just over at the left where I'm pointing.
Oh, yeah. Cummerbund.
You all right, Joe?
Yeah. Can you see him?
Yeah, up near the top.
Right. What?
Stay off, Burton. Don't come in the clearing. He's up in one of the trees.
Throw that gun down, then come down yourself.
All right, Ben.
Ready, Joe.
It's Carter.
Shotgun's over there. You alive?
Yeah.
It's a hard tree to climb. Wonder how he got up there.
I don't know, but this was the only way to get him down. We called an ambulance and had Jake Carver taken back to Los Angeles to the county hospital, the prison ward. We took the shotgun and the empty shells and booked them as evidence with the property clerk. The wrecked blue sedan was impounded. Two counts of murder were filed against Carver with the district attorney. There was still one important piece of evidence missing, the .45 pistol used in the robbery and murder of the San Pedro druggist. A month passed. While Carver recuperated in the prison ward of the county hospital, we were busy building a case for his conviction. We still had only enough evidence to convict him for one of the murders. Another 2 months went by. On August 30th, Jake Carver was brought to trial for the shotgun murder of police officer Robert Fillmore. 10 days later, the jury found him guilty of first-degree murder. He was sentenced to a life term in Folsom Penitentiary. Knowing that we didn't have enough evidence to convict his client for the murder of the druggist, Carver's lawyer demanded an immediate trial on the second charge. Wednesday, September 12th, 10 a.m. I was called to the chief of detective's office.
Friday, sit down.
Thank you.
Elliot and I have been talking about this Jake Carver thing.
They set the trial date yet?
Starts next Tuesday. Bringing Carver down from Folsom tomorrow.
That's bum luck. We're not going to convict him on the evidence we've got. We don't even have the gun.
We've got to get a conviction. He beat the death rap for killing Fillmore. If he gets over this one, it means he's still eligible for parole.
Yeah.
So he serves 10 years, maybe. Good behavior. He gets out and he's ready to start in all over again.
Yeah, if we could just sew him up for killing that druggist, we could put him away for good.
I don't know how, Skipper. It's a pretty good bet that no jury will convict him unless we find that gun.
We got another out. Just one.
What's that?
If we can get Carver to admit he killed that druggist.
It's a neat trick.
And you and Ben got him last May. did he see you at all? Do you think he could recognize you again?
Well, couldn't have gotten a very good look from where he was up in that tree. Ben did all the testifying at the trial. I wasn't even there. Now he wouldn't know me. Why?
When they bring Carver down from Folsom tomorrow, they'll put him in county jail while he's waiting trial.
Yeah.
Chief figures if we could plant you in the same cell with him, there's a chance he might talk, if you play it right.
No, I don't know. He's no beginner.
Neither are you. You carve enough of the right bait at the right time, there's a chance he'll put his foot in it.
Maybe. All right, will you set it up with the county jail?
Yeah, and remember, he's a killer. Don't take any chances.
Suppose he gets wise.
Well, then we'll know you tried.
The following day at 2 p.m., I was booked at Central Jail as Joe Ramos, a robbery suspect. Ramos was the actual name of an Eastern thief whom we knew was not acquainted with Jake Carver. After being mugged and fingerprinted, transportation officers took me to the 12th floor of the Hall of Justice where I was booked into the county jail. After that, I was taken down to a cell block on the 10th floor known as the high power tank, where prisoners charged with major crimes are held. During the day, the individual cells are left open and the prisoners are allowed to visit with one another. I was taken back and shown the cell I was assigned to. Jake Carver was already there, who was playing two-handed poker with another inmate on the lower bunk.
Here you are, Ramos. This cell here. You can take the top bunk.
How many cards you want?
Make it two, Jake.
Hey, move, will you? I want to get in my bunk.
Come on, make your bet.
Says two cigarettes.
You're two, bunk you six.
I said I'd like to get in my bunk.
Go on, Sam, play the game.
Okay, I'll see you.
Maybe you didn't hear me, Sam. I said I want to get in my bunk.
I heard you, Mac. I don't like shoving around like this.
All right, now sit down. What's your complaint?
Didn't they tell you when you came through the door? They bury you in a hole for beefing in here.
Then as long as I'm in here with you, let's get it straight right now. Don't bother me. And while you're at it, keep your rum-dumb pals out of here, you understand?
I don't think I do.
You'll be around for quite a while, smart guy. I won't forget this.
Oh, yeah.
Showtime. Come on, here it is. What are you doing down there, Dobbins?
Nothing. I always sit on the floor. Well,
get back to your cell. Ciao.
Yeah. See you, Jake.
What's this junk they feed you?
Boiled beef, boiled potatoes. It's a habit with them here.
Junk. Can you buy from the outside?
Candy. Sometimes pie. Guy comes around in the morning. Who are you?
Joe Ramos.
Ramos, huh? Chicago?
I've been there.
So have I. I'm Jake Carver. Hiya.
All right.
What are you up for?
Talk to my lawyer.
You got a smart mind.
You got a big one. You take care of your own worries, huh? I'll take care of mine.
I ain't got any worries. I got it made. Hey, you want that piece of bread?
I don't want any of it. Take it.
Tell the truth, I never had it so good. No witnesses, no evidence. You can't touch me.
Sure. That's why you're in here. 3 days passed. By playing the part of the tough gunman from Chicago, I succeeded in getting close to Carver. Because of the close confinement, I was with him almost constantly, but he still refused to confide. In a roundabout way, I pressed him as much as I could for the answer without making him suspicious. No results. 8:55 p.m. Sunday, 2 days before the trial opened. Sam, Jake Carver, and I were playing blackjack in the aisle just outside our cell.
All right, Sam, hit me.
There you are.
Okay, I'm good.
Ramos?
I'll stand.
18. Pay 19.
That's all for me.
Me too. I'm going to hit the sack.
Yeah, just when I start to come back.
Always crying.
Hey, Ramos, seems to me I remember you. Haven't I seen you around City Hall?
Sure. I live there.
All right, it's time. Lock up.
Ramos? What's he talking about?
I don't know. I got a headache. It's killing me.
Yeah? So let me crack your neck. It'll help it.
No, it's no good. You got any of them brown pills?
Come on, I'll crack your neck. Loosen up those nerves. Always helps me.
Yeah?
Yeah, here, let me show you. Come on, turn around.
Take it easy.
Just relax. Let yourself go.
Yeah.
I'll get my hands around the back of your neck. Come on, relax. Well, this won't hurt you.
All right.
You got to be careful with this, though. You'd break a guy's neck, you know?
Take it easy, huh?
What's the matter? Come on, relax.
All right.
Let me get a better grip on your neck.
Have it easy, huh?
All right, now. Yeah. All right, Stuart, how's that?
It's not bad. Feels a little better. I work something.
Sure. Hey, I noticed you had a visitor today. One of the boys in the East?
No. A friend of mine out here. He just got in town. The coppers are trying to pin a killing on him.
No, who is he?
Max Wesley. A good man. Tried to say he pulled a job down in San Pedro.
Pedro? What kind of job?
Stick up. Drugstore a couple months ago.
Yeah? That's what they got me on, you know?
Funny. Well, I think I'll get some shut-eye.
What about this job they're trying to hang on him, he tell you?
I don't remember. The guy who ran the store was shot up, I think.
Died. Mac wasn't even in town when it happened.
Happened in May? Last May?
I don't know. I'll see you in the morning.
Yeah.
Hard bed.
They didn't have nothing on Mac, son. They let him go.
Oh, that's yet. He's out on bail.
No, I mean, no evidence on him. No gun, huh?
Well, he's got a gun. I think that's what Mac said.
Where'd they find it, he say?
I don't know where they found it. Go to sleep, will you?
He mentioned anything else about Pedro, like San Pedro Hills?
Yeah. Well, maybe that's where they found it. I think Mac said that.
No. That couldn't be. Hey, it must have wasn't the Harbor Drugstore, was it?
What's eating you anyway? Will you go to sleep?
Look, Ramos. Ramos, I gotta know. It's important.
What are you talking about? I gotta get some sleep.
Will you listen a minute? I ditched the gun down there in the San Pedro Hills.
All right, what are you worrying about? They don't send you up for hiding guns.
Listen, I'm hot on that job. They got me on one murder rap. If they tag me on another one, it's for keeps.
What do you want me to do? Talk to the governor?
Are you sure this guy Mac said that they found a gun?
Now, look, Carver. Mac said they found a gun in the San Pedro Hills. Now, you get on down in your bunk and let's talk about it in the morning,
huh? What kind? Did he say what kind?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Was it a .45?
Something like that. Yeah, .45. I guess that was it. Listen.
Got the jailer barking down here.
Quiet down in there.
All right. You go to sleep now?
I can't. It's not the same one. They couldn't have found it. They haven't talked to me. Ramos.
Huh?
When did they find the gun? Did Max tell you that?
When
did they find the gun? When?
I don't know.
He didn't say where? San Pedro Hills. Ramos, I gotta know. Wasn't by a covert, was it, on the hill road?
I don't know. I'll ask Max the next time I see him. Is that where you ditched yours?
They couldn't have found it. Nobody could have. It was this covert, see, back on the road.
Yeah.
There was a piece of cement broken off the bottom edge of the covert, kind of a hollowed-out space inside. I pushed the dirt all around it. You gotta ask Max.
Mm-hmm.
Ask him where they found that gun.
Yeah, I'll see him Wednesday. I'll ask him.
You gotta find out. They could put me away for good.
What are you worrying about? They haven't paired you up yet with the gun they found.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Maybe they didn't figure it. Maybe they forgot.
Maybe.
Yeah. Cops are dumb. They forget. That's what everybody says, isn't it?
Yeah. That's what everybody says.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent. On September 18th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 91, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
It's amazing how many long cigarette smokers are changing to Fatima. Here is the actual report.
From coast to coast, king-size Fatima has more than doubled its smokers.
Yes, more and more smokers every day are discovering that Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes.
Long cigarette smokers find Fatima has a much different, much better flavor and aroma.
Long cigarette smokers find that Fatima is extra mild because it's the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos superbly blended to make it extra mild.
So enjoy extra mild Fatima. Best of all long cigarettes.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
The murder gun, a .45 caliber automatic pistol, was recovered from the San Pedro Hills, and Jacob John Carver was brought to trial. He was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. The jury again refused to recommend the death penalty. Carva is now serving a life term in the state penitentiary without possibility of parole. You have just heard Dragnet, authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police, W.A. Wharton, Los Angeles Police Department.
Dragnet wishes to thank the editors of Radio Best magazine for their considerate appraisal of this program. For those of you who may be interested, a novelized version of Dragnet appears in the April issue of Radio Best. Fatima Cigarettes, the best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet from Los Angeles. Tomorrow, hear Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman in the Halls of Ivy on NBC.
We have some time for Calling All Detectives. This is from August 31st, 1948. Golf.
Calling all detectives. Most people consider golf a reasonably mild pastime. But I once had a case where a game of golf killed one person and convicted a second. That is the situation on this page from my casebook, the casebook of Jerry Browning, private detective. There's one thing I, Jerry Browning, private detective, am sure about. You can't play with the idea of murder. It's a losing game. Hank Foster and I were on the practice green at Swanky Silver Oaks Country Club, waiting our turn at the number one tee. Sorry we have to wait, Jerry. Big turnout today. There was a rumpus going on at the number one tee. Hank scowled. That's R.J. Walker kicking up a fuss again. Every club has one old crab like that. R.J. Walker was a genuine business tycoon, and I don't get to see people like that close up very often. I strolled over to the tee just as...
I won't have this caddy. He's stupid, lazy, and steals golf balls.
The caddy was a nice-looking youngster. At the moment, mad clean through. He flung Walker's golf bag on the ground and stalked off. Walker fumed some more, but just then Hank came up to me. Come on, Jerry. The caddy master's signaling. Let's tee off. Right from the start, I played poorly. I was pressing. And the harder I tried, the wilder I got. Finally, on the 13th hole, I hit a screaming slice far into the rough. Both the caddy and I prowled the thick undergrowth in the rough. We didn't locate the ball, but we did find the lifeless body of R.J. Walker. Invited to play golf at a swanky country club, I hit a ball into the rough and found the body of wealthy, cantankerous R.J. Walker. Back at the clubhouse, a doctor diagnosed the death as instantaneous and resulting from
a sudden severe blow in the head. In my opinion, Mr. Walker was hit by a golf ball.
My friend Hank looked at me. So did my caddy. I knew what they were thinking, that it was the ball I hit into the rough that killed Walker. Well, maybe it was. I walked over to the body, took a good look at it. Hey, doctor, come over a second. Look at these skin abrasions and the depth of the wound. If Walker was killed by a golf ball, it must have been shot from a cannon to hit with such force. In my opinion, this was no accident. It was murder. I walked outside and almost ran into the caddy master. He was arguing with a tall man who had a golf bag slung over his shoulder.
I'm very sorry, sir, but this is a private club. When the Greens chairman reported that you didn't appear to be sponsored, it was my duty to question you.
When I tell you I'm the guest of R.J. Walker, if you'll call him, he'll identify me.
Isn't he likely to do that, sir? What is your name? And why didn't Mr. Walker sign you in on the guest book?
The tall man set down his golf bag, mopped his brow.
This is ridiculous. I'm Roger Powell. I'm in the same business as Mr. Walker, cotton milling. He invited me here to discuss a possible merger of our companies. I joined him at the 11th tee. We played two holes. Then I lost my ball and got separated from him. If you ask him, I know he'll confirm it.
The caddy master looked unhappy.
I'm sorry, sir, but Mr. Walker is dead. An accident.
Powell looked stunned. Then, without another word, picked up his golf bag and slowly walked away. I watched him go. Something about the man puzzled me. The story he'd told was straight enough, but some obscure mental impulse kept nudging me, warning of a false note.
And then suddenly I had it.
I found my friend Hank Foster in the clubhouse. Hank, do you know a man named Roger Powell?
My father knows him. Why?
He's outside, getting ready to leave. We've got to stop him. Get him into a game of golf with us. Don't ask questions. Just hurry. We caught up with Powell just as he was about to step into his car. His golf bag was propped against the fender, and I pretended to trip over it. Powell dived for the bag, recovered it, and stood glaring at me. Well, I'm very sorry, sir. Entirely my fault. Powell nodded curtly and started to get into the car again when Hank stepped up.
Aren't you Roger Powell?
Powell turned.
Yes, I am. Why?
I'm Hank Foster. My father does a lot of business with your company.
Powell gave him a frosty smile. I put my hand on the car door, held it closed.
Hank and I heard about your discussion with the caddy master, Mr. Powell.
We don't want you to think that folks at Silver Oaks are rude to guests. In fact, we'd like you to play a round of golf with us. Powell obviously didn't want to do it, but Hank, taking his cue from me, was insistent. Finally,
well, I don't have time for a full round, but if you insist, I'll play a couple of holes.
I let off, hit one straight and clean down the fairway, now that I wasn't interested in how well I played. Then Powell teed up, with his bag still swinging from his shoulder. That was strange enough, but when he pulled a number five iron out of the bag...
Mr. Powell, you don't really drive with that, do you?
Powell was badly flustered.
Why, I always thought I'd like to try driving with this kind of a club.
Hank didn't get it.
And with a bag over your shoulder?
Powell shook his head, took a wild swing at the ball, and didn't even hit the ground. That's when I stepped up.
It's no use, Powell. You can't bluff it. You may as well admit you've never played golf before. I think I'd better see what you've got in that golf bag.
He put up a fight, but he didn't have a chance. While Hank held him, I looked through the bag and found the murder weapon. An iron club with a steel ball approximately the size of a golf ball attached to the end of it. He confessed after that. Tough old R.J. Walker had been ruining him. So Powell eliminated the competition. The hard way. After we turned him over to the police, Hank and I finished our game. I was playing rotten again, now that it counted. Hank watched my hook go into a sand trap, shook his head.
You sure are a terrible player, Jerry. Is that why you suspected Powell couldn't play at all?
I smiled, shook my head. Nope. He was wearing ordinary street shoes with a pointed toe. And I figured no golf player, not even the worst duffer, would appear on a course in shoes like that. And that's all there was to it. Aside from the fact that Hank beat me on every hole. Like I said, a lot of people play with the idea of murder. But those who carry it out are generally left holding the bag. Listen next time to Calling All Detectives, Mystery Drama, Mystery Quiz, and a chance for you to match wits with yours truly, Jerry Browning, Private Detective.
Enjoy the very best in radio. Be sure that you're dialing right. Seems like you ought to hear Monty Woolley every Saturday night.
The magnificent Montague.
Every Saturday night, NBC.
The OTR Now radio program.
This program was related to a former president. That's when it was on television, when it was hosted by Ronald Reagan. This is a radio version. It was an innovative radio and television anthology series that featured true stories of the American West. It was created in 1930 by Ruth Woodman. The program was broadcast on radio until 1945, and then it continued from 1952 to 1975 as a syndicated television series. This episode is called Shoe Fly, and the program is Death Valley Days. Let's listen.
As the old morning bugle call of the covered wagon trains dies away among the echoes, another true story of Death Valley Days is brought to you by the Pacific Coast Borax Company, who give you also the miracle of borax in three convenient forms. 20 Mule Team Borax for household use,
20 Mule Team Borax soap chips in the big blue and yellow sunshine box for washing clothes and dishes, and Boraxo for toilet use. Our mail these days has plenty to say about Boraxo. I was delighted to see your Boraxo dispensers at the San Francisco World's Fair. I'm so glad to find Boraxo is regular equipment at Standard Oil service stations. I was visiting friends at their ranch and found they ordered Boraxo in case lots and had cans in the washhouse for their cowhands who were just crazy about it. My little girl goes to a private play school for children of preschool age, and she says the teacher makes them all wash up with Boraxo. My husband is a mechanic. He taught me to use it. It certainly can take the dirt off and still leave the hands soft and smooth. I work in the hosiery department of one of Los Angeles's leading department stores. Our buyer has taught us girls to use Boraxo so our hands will be smooth enough not to snag the stockings when we run our hands into them to show customers. There are many thousands of enthusiastic Boraxo users like these. They come from all walks of life, all occupations, and they all say the same thing about Boraxo. It does take the dirt off, even ground-in dirt. It does remove many kinds of stains and odors, yet it leaves the skin soft and smooth each time. Even a young child can use it freely for knees and ankles and elbows, as well as hands. Boraxo comes in a sanitary pour-top can. The contents stay clean and dry. It can be used very economically. It won't clog drain pipes or leave a sandy film on basin or tub because it dissolves completely in water. Boraxo is a scientific blend of fine toilet soap and the famous 20 Mule Team Borax. There is no other product like it. If you're letting your stock get low, may we remind you that tomorrow is marketing day for the weekend. Order two or three cans and put them in bathrooms and kitchen. And now for the old ranger and his evening's yarn, which has the extraordinary title of Shoofly.
Well, the title's no more extraordinary than the woman herself.
Shoofly was a woman?
Yes, woman prospector.
Well.
I've come across plenty of women prospectors in my time. Some of them I've already told you about. Now, there was Happy Days at Goldfield, remember?
Yeah.
Went on that glorious junket at the age of 80, hopping freights clear across the continent and back.
Yeah, I remember.
Uh-huh. And Silver Susie. It operated a mine at Cerro Gordo for years and years in order to put her children through school and college. And Ma Riggs and Hard Pan Hattie and, I've known a bunch of them in the desert around Death Valley. But none of them quite like the woman I'm going to tell you about tonight. I can remember perfectly the first time I ever met her. Me and Eddie Grannon had come to Independence to file a claim we just located up in the Panamints. As we walked into the county recorder's office, we found him busy with another customer. A smallish woman with sharp eyes and wispy gray hair. Dressed. It's funny how you remember such things. She dressed in a gray and a white calico dress and a black straw hat.
To corner monument number 4, thence northwest 300 feet to place of beginning, including all dips, spurs, angles, and variations. Mm-hmm. This looks all right?
Of course, all right.
The name of the mining claim above described is and shall be known as I'm sorry, I can't quite make this out. It looks like Shoofly.
Yeah, it is Shoofly. Because it expresses my sentiments.
You mean,
Shoofly, don't bother me.
Oh, I see. Notice to claim jumpers, eh?
Exactly.
Well, let's hope they take the hint.
They'd better.
Located this 21st day of May, 1906. This your signature here?
Yeah.
There's no other?
I got only one name.
No, I mean there's no other locator?
No.
Well.
Law don't call for more than one, does it?
Oh, no. No, of course not.
Then why'd you act so surprised?
Well, you see, you're being a woman, I thought...
Plenty of women locate claims.
Well, they generally have partners, though.
Men partners.
Yep.
More fools, they.
Maybe.
Yep. What do I owe you?
The recorder's fee is $1.
All right. Here you are.
Now, you understand about assessment work. State law calls for $100 worth each year to be...
I know all about that.
All right. Just wanted to make sure. Folks have been known to lose legal right to a claim because they didn't do the necessary development work.
Don't worry. I won't be losing my rights to this claim.
I hope not.
And now, give me my change, will you? In a hurry.
Well, let's see. You handed me a five.
Yeah.
And here's one, two, three, four you get back.
Haven't you got any real money?
Well, that's...
No, I don't like that Los Angeles paper. I want silver.
All right, ma'am, whatever you say. Here you are. One, two, three, four.
Yeah, that's better.
Surprised she didn't bite him to make sure they was bona fide.
Maybe she ain't got any teeth.
What's that?
Nothing, ma'am. I was just talking to my partner here.
Oh, hello, Eddie. Hello, Ranger. Didn't recognize you.
Hello, Jim.
Howdy.
I'll be with you boys in a minute. Just as soon as this lady is through.
I'm through now. Good day.
Good day, madam. And good luck to the shoe fly. Shoe fly, don't bother me.
Shoe fly, don't bother me. Shoe fly, don't bother me. I belong to Company G.
Gosh, what a charter.
Hey, who is she, Jim?
I don't know. I never saw her before today.
If you never see her again, it'll be too soon, huh?
Well, I know two desert rats I am glad to see. Where you fellas been all this time?
Oh, scratching around.
Did you find anything?
Would we be here if we hadn't?
Hey, you sound like old Shoefly.
Hey, now, you look here.
What have you located this time, boys? The lost gun sight?
Maybe.
It's silver, anyhow.
And in the pyramids.
Here's a copy of your location notice.
Well, let's see it. Uh-huh. Notice hereby given to the undersigned of located 1,500 feet by 600 feet, vein situated between Tuber Canyon and Wild Rose Canyon in the Panamint Mining District.
Hmm?
Well, that's a funny thing.
What is?
Why, that's the same locality as where she just located her claim.
Who?
That woman who was just in here.
You mean that...
Old Shoefly?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'll be darned.
Are you sure?
Well, here's the location notice she filed.
Let me see.
See?
Situated south of Wild Rose Canyon.
And north of Tuber Canyon.
Now, that can't be any place but between the two.
No.
You're right.
Neighbors, eh? Well, that'll make it nice.
I don't think.
Well, we run out of butter and eggs where we can borrow from her. If we get lonesome evenings, why
we... Remember the lady's sentiments, boys. Shoofly, don't bother me.
Shoofly, don't bother me. Shoofly, don't bother me. I belong to Company G. Shoofly, don't bother me. Shoofly, don't bother me. Shoofly, don't bother me. I belong to Company G.
Well, the hot weather set in about then, and Eddie and me quit the desert for several months. The time we was ready to go back and start work on our claim, we'd forgot all about our Shoefly neighbor till we was part way up the canyon.
Hello.
What's the matter?
Look at that.
Huh? Where?
That sign.
Private property. Keep off. No trespassing. Penal code provision. Well, can you beat that?
That ain't all neither. Look.
A chain across the trail.
Yeah. Just in case you can't read.
Well, who in tarnation did that?
Whoever it is, they ain't got no right to put a barrier up across this canyon. How do they think we're going to get up there to our property?
No trespassing. Penal code provisions under section 587 to 625. Is that a threat, do you reckon?
It'll take more than that to scare me. Get up, Jerry.
Wait a minute, Eddie. What are you going to do?
Well, right under it.
Well, it's pretty low now. I don't think you can negotiate, not unless you unpack.
Well, then we'll take it down.
Is it padlocked?
Huh? No.
Good.
Well, I'll unfasten it, and you can drive the burros through.
You'll do nothing of the kind. Huh? I'm the owner here. Nobody goes through without my say-so.
Why, it's her.
The Shoefly woman.
Oh, you know me, huh?
Well, yes, of course.
We was in the county recorder's office the same time you was, last June.
And he blabbed to you, did he?
No, certainly not.
Well, we couldn't help overhearing the name of your claim, though.
And its location and a few other important things.
Well, we did...
And now you come snooping around to see what I got.
Oh, not at all, ma'am.
You won't have a chance to see nothing, because I'm letting nobody pass this chain.
Yeah, but, madam...
And if you try to force your way past... You'll get this.
Hey, wait a minute.
A gun.
Yeah. It's load of dough, and I'm a good shot.
Well, now, listen, ma'am.
You heard what I said.
We're good.
Go on, vamoose.
Well, let me explain.
No back talk now.
We ain't trespassers.
No.
No. Huh. Didn't look like it taking down that chain.
We got a claim further up the canyon. Now, if you don't believe it, we'll show you the records.
We're on our way up there now.
Not by this trail, you ain't.
Yeah, but we...
And that's final.
Well, this is the only direct trail, ma'am.
Yeah, to get up there from the other side, we'd have to go away to heck and back.
Yeah, that's your funeral.
Well, now, surely you wouldn't put us to all that time and trouble, ma'am, when...
You see that chain, don't you?
Well, yes, but...
And you see that sign?
Sure.
And you see this gun? I don't know how I can make it any plainer to you. Unless I...
Hey, be careful.
Say, what do you mean, shooting at us like that?
That's your starting signal.
You...
And you turn your outfit around and start down this trail, do you hear? And if you ain't on your way by the time I count 10, I'll shoot again. And this time, I'll take good aim.
Roger.
1, 2...
Why, you...
3...
Come on, Eddie, come on. There's no use arguing with
it. The old she-devil.
Turn around, Kate.
6,
turn around. Down we 7, go.
7...
Well, sir, that was the beginning of our troubles with our neighbor Shoofly. Not only did we have to take a long, roundabout, difficult trail back and forth to our property, but whenever she got so much as a glimpse of us, she'd come a-stalking around with that gun of hers, taking occasional pot shots at us just to kind of remind us that she was still there. After a couple of months of this, we finally went to the sheriff and complained.
It ain't just us, Sheriff. She's got all the prospectors in that region terrorized. you can laugh if you want to, but...
So one poor old woman's got you all you tough desert rats terrorized. Well, I'm surprised at you.
Maybe terrorized is putting it a little bit too strong.
Yeah, she's giving us all the willies anyway.
Well, that's a fact, Sheriff. To say nothing of the inconvenience she's caused us.
Yeah, she's got an idea we're trying to jump her claim.
Whereas she's really the one who's claiming something that don't belong to her.
What do you mean?
Why, her property don't take in that canyon trail.
Well, the boundary runs about 25 feet to the east of it.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
We've seen the location notice over at the recorder's office.
Well, have you explained this to her?
Explained? Heck, we can't get within shouting distance of her without having her take a shot at us.
Crazy, most likely.
She ain't crazy. She's just a ornery.
In any case, ain't no use arguing with
her. Well, I'll go up and talk turkey to her.
Good.
Well, you best take a posse with you, Sheriff.
I reckon I can tackle her single-handed.
Hey, you don't know Shoofly.
Tell me, is she there most of the time?
All the time.
Every minute of the day and night.
She never leaves the place.
Yeah. Who's working the ground for her?
I don't know. We never got close enough to see.
Yeah, it's my guess she's doing the work herself.
What makes you think so?
Well, because I don't know who she'd ever find who'd be willing to work for her. Hey, old porcupine.
Well, now, Sheriff, if she is doing it herself, she ain't getting very far. Her eyes are never off that trail for long.
Well, you leave her to me. I'll go up there and talk to her.
If she don't shoot you first.
By George, she has got you terrorized. Now, let's see. You say this property of hers is between Wild Rose and Tuber Canyon.
And so, a few days later, the sheriff started out from Independence, eastward across the Argus Range, and up into the Panamints. He found Shoofly looking for all the world like somebody's nice old grandmother sitting in a rocking chair knitting in front of her cabin. In her lap, though, under the knitting, lay a gun which she reached for as he rode up.
Howdy.
You can't get up the canyon this way, stranger. This is private property.
The Shoofly, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
You're the owner?
I am.
Then you're the person I come to see.
Shoofly ain't for sale, mister. I'm hanging on to it, so you can turn right around and go back where you come from.
I'm not interested in buying your mine.
Then what do you want?
I happen to be the sheriff of Inyo County.
Oh. Well, you can't scare me.
No. No, I understand you're not exactly the timid type. Been hearing complaints about you lately from some of our citizens. Seems you're
You're not behaving in a very friendly fashion towards me.
Got to protect my property against claim jumpers.
Nobody's trying to jump your claim, ma'am.
They would if I give them half a chance. They think just because I'm a woman and an old woman, they can walk right onto my ground.
If you're talking about the trail up the canyon, that don't belong to you.
You see that sign, don't you?
Yeah, sure. But that still don't make it yours. Your claim don't come within 25 feet of that trail.
Why, listen, I located
it. I know exactly what you located. Got the papers right here in my pocket.
Oh.
Now you've got to take that chain down from across the trail and let folks by.
I'll do nothing of the
That's
kind.
That's a public right-of-way, and you can't block
Will
it.
Will I?
Either you take that chain down, or I'll take you along with me back to Independence.
Why, you can't do that.
Oh, yes, I can. I'm the sheriff of this here county, and I can arrest you and lock you up for 30 days or 60 days or whatever length of time the judge decides it'd be good for you.
You're in league with them claim jumpers, I know. They want to get me away from here so they can take possession of the shoe fly.
Now you're talking nonsense. Come on, let's see you take that chain down.
I
don't like to arrest ladies, but if I have to...
All right, I'll take it down.
Good.
Sign's going to stay where it is, though.
I've no objection to that. Well, go ahead.
Chain padlocked. I don't know if I can find the key.
I'll wait till you do.
I think maybe Ah Sing's got it.
Who's Ah Sing?
Man that works for me.
Oh, Chinaman, huh?
Yep.
Where is he?
He went down this morning with a load of ore. He won't be back till tomorrow sometime.
Oh? Well, then I might as well make myself comfortable.
You gonna wait?
Yep. Not gonna budge till I see that chain down.
He might have left the key in the cabin.
Or it just might even be in your own pocket.
Eh?
Well, no harm in looking anyway. Yeah, I thought so. Well, let me have it.
I'll do the unlocking myself.
Yeah, just as you say. Only be quick about it. I've got to get back to Independence today.
There. Now, you satisfied?
I will be if you keep it down. But just let me hear that you put that chain or any other kind of barrier up again, and I'll be paying you another call with a pair of handcuffs.
You can't scare me, you nor nobody else.
All right, Pino. Come on, boy. Let's get going.
There's nothing that walks on two legs can scare me, even if it does wear a badge.
Come on, Pino. Up this way. That's a boy. Easy now. We'll pay a call on the boys before we go back and tell them everything's fixed up fine. Trail's open, Grandma's busy with her knitting. Hey, oh boy, Who fired that shot?
I did.
Why, you old...
I seen a quail up yonder. I thought I'd bring it down for supper.
Oh, you did, eh? Quail for supper. Man for breakfast, she means. I got a good mind to go back and... Oh, what's the use? Come on, Pino. Come on, boy. Oh, easy now.
When the sheriff told us he'd put the fear of the law into old Shoofly, we had our doubts. And we soon found our doubts were justified. She didn't put the chain up again across the trail, but...
It might just as well be there, Sheriff, for all we can get by.
Why, she sits there in that rocking chair of hers and pops away at us with her gun if we so much as come within hailing distance.
Oh, she don't ever hit you, though.
'Cause we duck.
Oh... She wouldn't hit you anyway. It's just a gesture, this shooting. Why, she done the same thing to me the time I was up there.
Oh, you didn't tell us about that.
Well, wasn't worth mentioning.
Shot at you, did she?
Well, she said she was aiming at a quail.
And you let her get away with it? You're a fine sheriff. Why didn't you arrest her and throw her in jail?
Well,
yeah, because she's got him buffaloed like all the rest of us.
No such thing.
Then go and arrest her now.
I would if I...
Oh, I know there'd be an if.
Now listen, fellas, I'll admit this shoe fly woman's an annoyance.
Annoyance? She's a menace.
Now, Eddie, come.
Well, she really is a public nuisance, Sheriff. Well, we can't work our claim like it ought to be worked with her around.
Yeah, she's driving everybody away from there.
Well, I'd like to do something about it, and I will when I get the time to go over there again. But you see, right now, I got some important business to attend to that just can't be put off.
In the opposite direction, I suppose.
Up in Montana.
Huh?
Montana?
Mm-hmm. Just got word this morning they caught the leader of the Bruce gang. You know, the fellas who robbed the First National.
Sure.
And they're holding him in Butte.
Well, when are you leaving?
Right away.
And that means you'll be away a couple of weeks.
Most likely.
Gosh.
When I get back, though, I'll do something about your friend Shoofly. I promise you. I'll go up there and tell her where to head in. And if she hands me any back talk, I'll take...
But by the time the sheriff returned from Montana, there was no getting up into Wild Rose Canyon or getting down from there either. The first storm of the winter had set in, and a bad one it was, too. For almost a week it snowed, and the wind blowed a gale. All we could do, Eddie and me, was to plug up the chinks in our cabin and thank our lucky stars we'd laid in a good supply of wood to keep us from freezing to death. Even after the storm had cleared, the drifts were so deep that it was, well, it was just about impossible to break any kind of a trail. So you can imagine our surprise one day as we were sitting playing checkers on an improvised checkerboard with the pieces of ore for men.
Yes, your move.
Well, now let me study this situation for a minute. Now, wait a minute. Now, if I move this feller, you'll jump me. Yeah. Now, on the other hand, if I leave him where he is, well, you'll take...
It is somebody knocking.
Yes, it is.
Let me hear.
My gosh, it sounds like... It is.
Shoofly.
Yes.
Thank the Lord you're here. That's great. Maybe you're gone, cleared out for the storm.
No, we've been here right along.
Come in. Here, let me give you a hand.
If you hadn't have been here, I don't know what I'd have done. I couldn't have went back to him. No, I couldn't.
Pull that chair up for her, Eddie, by the stove there.
All right.
That's it. She's half frozen.
Take the cold that's making me shiver. It's...
Yeah, how about some whiskey?
No.
Yeah, you'd better.
No.
It'll do you good, ma'am. That'll warm you up.
Yeah, put new life into you.
Didn't do him no good. He just turned bluer and bluer.
Who?
Ah Sing.
Who?
Ah Sing. Chinaman is working for me. Did you ever see a Chinaman turn blue, mister? Well... Ain't blue exactly. It's green. Yellow and blue, that makes green, don't it?
Well, what are you talking about?
Ah Sing.
Well, is he sick?
Dead.
What?
Dead?
Yep.
When?
Where?
Oh, 4 or 5 days ago. Last Tuesday, I think it was.
Over at your place?
Yep.
Gosh.
Yeah. What was the matter with him?
I don't know. He took bad all of a sudden, pains. I brought him into the shack and done everything I could for him, but he just got bluer and bluer. Then he had a convulsion and he died.
Good Lord.
Where is he now?
Right where he died, of course. Where do you think? Right where he's been for the past 5 days and 5 nights. Laying on the bunk, just a-staring and a-staring.
Well, now, you'd best have some whiskey, ma'am.
No.
Why, after what you've been through, why?
You stayed right there with him all this time?
Nothing else I could do. I couldn't get out with the blizzard raging and I couldn't put him out.
No.
I didn't have the nerve.
5 days and 5 nights, snowed in with a corpse. Gosh.
It was awful, the nights especially. Storm howling outside, him laid out there. So, I never knowed before what it is to be afraid. I've always said there was nothing in God's world could scare me. But when it ain't in this world, when it's something dead, stiff and staring.
You take it easy now, ma'am.
Yeah. Try not to think about it.
Well, as soon as the storm cleared, I got out. I knowed I couldn't make it all the way to Darwin, but I figured I might be able to make it up here to your place.
I don't know how you ever did it with no trail, Brooke.
You let me stay here, won't you?
Why, of course.
Sure.
You just make yourself comfortable here for the night. In the morning, we'll all go back up to your place.
Not me.
All right, then. You can stay here, and Eddie and me will go over and tend to things.
I'm never going back there.
What?
I'll never set foot on that ground again.
You mean that
I'm quitting.
You're going to sell out?
Sell out or just clear out. I'm all through with the Shoofly. Yep, and I'm all through with the Panamints in the desert.
Yeah, ma'am.
Oh, well, now. You may feel different later on.
Well, I'm not waiting to find out. I'm going to going back to Idaho, where I come from, just as fast as I can get there.
Well, I'll be. Say, hand me that there bottle, will you, Ranger?
Yes, sir.
A lady may not want a drink, but I do.
Did he have a wife and children, ma'am?
No family at all.
Well, for a Chinaman, that's a calamity. He'll leave no descendants.
Yes.
Well, I hereby appoint myself his descendant, by adoption, to bury him proper, protect his effects, and set off firecrackers in his honor at least once a year. To our Singh, my neighbor and revered ancestor.
The program you've just heard is another true story of Death Valley Days, presented for your enjoyment every Friday evening at this hour by the Pacific Coast Borax Company, producers of 20 Mule Team Borax for household use, the 20 Mule Team Borax soap chips in the big blue and yellow sunshine box for washing clothes and dishes, and Boraxo for toilet use. Cottons continue to reign supreme in the summer clothes picture, with everything from overalls to dinner clothes made of this perfect fabric. Perfect because it's cool, good-looking, serviceable, and above all, can always be quickly restored to pristine freshness by a tubbing with 20 Mule Team Borax soap chips. Our soap chips, due to their blend with 20 Mule Team Borax, produce those creamy, long-lasting suds that literally float the dirt out. No need to rub and scrub. Just press the suds through the fabric, and out comes the dirt. But it is most important to look for the trademark of the 20 Mule Team on the box when you buy. For this is a symbol with a meaning. The discovery of borax in Death Valley back in the 1880s was an event of far-reaching importance to industries as to each individual home in America. So great was the need for this gift of nature that men and mules endured untold hardship to bring the treasure out. The largest wagons ever made were created for the purpose. And strings of 20 mules were trained to answer to the jerk line and jump the traces in rounding the precipitous mountain trails safely with their great loads. So that's the story of where the trademark 20 Mule Team came from. And its presence on your box of soap chips is important to you because it guarantees that 20 Mule Team Borax soap chips contain enough 20 Mule Team Borax to be of real benefit in cutting grease and grime, dissolving dirt, conditioning your water, whether it's hard or soft, and to make creamy, long-lasting suds. Next week, the old Ranger plans to tell you about the telephone operator who had her finger on the pulse of Goldfield for 33 years. The artists featured in tonight's Death Valley Days program were Irene Hubbard, the old Ranger John McBride, Milton C. Herman, Frank Butler, and Jeffrey Bryant. This is George Hicks speaking.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
KFI Los Angeles.
Well, time's run out for the OTR Now radio program. Be sure to visit our website where you can find all sorts of old-time radio for your enjoyment at www.otrnow.com. Tune in next time when we present more of this great old-time radio. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Rick Radke. We'll be back again. We hope you'll be back too. So long.
For more information on our programming, please visit www.otrnow.com. Email us at otr@starcreations.com or write us at P.O. Box 17148, Long Beach, California, 90807. OTR Now is a registered trademark of Star Creations. This is a Star Creations production. All rights reserved.